WRIF.com or at the WRIF studios during regular business hours.
Let's talk about something important.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
What we've got here is...
It's a little game of show and tell. You don't want to show me nothing, but you tell me everything.
The jig is up. A communist, fascist, progressive, an evil, mind-controlling, symbol-ridden, living, breathing evil...
Oh, that is a violent, odious lie!
Well, sir, while I may not agree with what you say, I'll defend to the death your right to say it.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
Hey, Jolene.
Hey,
how you
Peter.
Doing?
Doing well on a Sunday.
All ready.
Mm-hmm. Ready to go.
Hit those phones again.
Yes.
313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Well, there's so much going on. There's, let me turn my headphones down because they're beginning to squeal already. All this stuff with the TSA on these planes and these naked body scanners. As we continue to have our standard of living, our salaries, all that under assault, the possibility of taxes rising. Obama and nukes, are we going to be safer, more at risk? On and on. The health system, I'm just kind of going across what we got here. Where Detroit figures in terms of the most dangerous city and the gang back together, Bush and Cheney at the opening of the Bush Library, at least breaking ground for it. But... what dominates everything to the exclusion of everything else?
Oh, let me guess. Sarah Palin or Bristol Palin?
Yeah. Well, here's the setup.
They had another big week.
Yeah, here's the setup for it. Every Tuesday night I play handball, the manly art of handball, as we call it. You know, no rackets,
nothing. I didn't even
know
people still did that.
Oh, yeah, we got to play ambidextrously and everything like that. You know. So anyway. So I come home at about 11:30 at night, as I always do. And my sister was visiting last week, last Tuesday. And so I walk in, and they're both standing up, and they both look angry. So naturally, what's the reaction of any guy? What did I do, and why did I get caught?
Uh-oh.
Right? And so my wife says, "Do you know what happened?" And I said, I realized that wait a minute, you're giving it away.
Okay.
I had no idea what she was talking about, but do you know what happened? It didn't, it wasn't posed like, do you know what you did? or for God? Or,
no, it was just, do you know what happened?
Do you know what happened? Or did you hear what happened? And I really knew I was not on any hook. And I said, no. I said, Brandy got kicked off the show. So my mind starts racing here. Brandy, show. What the? Kicked off. I know. It must be Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah.
Brandy. So I remember that she told me, this is an R&B singer. Is it Brandy's an R&B singer? And she was quite good and got like perfect scores. 10! I like that.
Yes, she did. Yes.
I like those judges. 10!
I know.
Like that. Although one time for Bristol Palin, she got 3 sixes. So they're the judges holding up 666.
I heard about that.
So I went, yeah. And so they both started raving about how Bristol Palin couldn't dance and Brandy was incredible. And it was the whole thing was fixed. And they were, you know, just.
That's the word.
They were beside themselves.
Oh, yeah, right.
So it turns out to be this, like everything connected with the Palins, this huge media spectacular.
Oh, it's unreal.
Yeah. And a spectacle, not a spectacular, a spectacle.
Spectacle, yeah. That also weaved on in back to Willow. Is it that right?
Oh, yeah. Willow, the daughter of the 16-year-old that was letting loose with these homophobic slurs on Facebook.
She was using the other F word.
Yeah.
You know?
Joined by Bristol.
By Bristol. Yeah. Because all the haters.
Yeah.
They were making actually fun of Sarah Palin's reality show. That's what these people...
The people that were posting on Facebook.
Yeah, yeah. And so they both got in and got a little crazy and a little homophobic. And, you know, it's just so not surprising to me, Peter. They're bad parents.
Well, if any of you are wondering why in the hell are we doing ABC, the network which broadcast Dancing with the Stars, such a big favor, because ultimately they're the big winners. I mean, they have people always say there's a million people listening to some of these right-wing nuts on Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
They had 21 million people listening to Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, Mama Grizzly was there.
On last Tuesday?
Yeah.
Huh.
I just saw clips and pictures. I don't really, I don't really watch it. I'm not a regular watcher.
Well, all right. So someone could wonder, why in the world would we be spending any amount of precious time
when
Because when we can be talking about, is the world more at danger, more at risk with this new proposed NATO nuclear shield? Or what about the economy? What about the continuing attack on our salaries?
What about the jobless benefits?
What about jobless benefits and stuff like that? Well, this, believe it or not, it's all connected.
It was our pals from the Michigan State Police.
I was just
waving.
I was wondering what was going on. But here is the deal, and here is why I think it's important and how indicative it is of the minds of these right-wingers. And it says it on my website. You can go to Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerbe.com. And the article is how Palin conservatives are cheating the Dancing with the Stars voting system. But what I wrote underneath it was, as usual, the righties couldn't care less about talent or democracy. They're all about power. And, you know, they have these standards, these Christian values, these family values, and it doesn't matter how much they violate them. They like this Senator Vitter in Louisiana that got reelected after they found out.
That?
Well, what, you know.
I can't keep track.
prostitutes. Prostitutes with that guy. Remember we said that nine gay teabaggers got elected.
You had me, remember?
Right.
I said, like, what?
Well, you said, who are they? Well, we'll find out when they get busted at rest stops on the freeway. So it is just part of the entire corruption that they represent, the corruption of the human spirit, the corruption of the political process, all of it. And when I said, when I changed the word from spectacular to spectacle, that the word spectacle, although it's in common usage, say, well, that was really a spectacle. But in some sort of critical thought, the word spectacle has the definition of something particularly on television now, but where there is a few actors that are the active ones, that are defining life, defining what everyone's talking about. And then there's this undifferentiated mass of passive spectators, right? So that's what the spectacle is all about. But here, let me just read a few of these Palin things. Conservative blogger Kevin Dujan is psyched. He's actually starting to think Palin can win the whole kit and caboodle, and this is not next presidency, but Dancing with the Stars. The 20-year-old Palin's improbable run to next week's finals, championed by websites like Dujan's Hilba, well, I don't want to give it, has led to such an uproar that conspiracy theories are floating. Some fans are insisting they'll never watch again, and a Wisconsin man actually shot up his television, apparently in disgust over Palin's
dancing. Can you believe that? That's a good one.
Yeah, the real winner. It says ABC, of course, the always popular Dancing with the Stars, is enjoying a ratings boost. But so on there, and I don't get this. Here they have this 20-year-old who can't dance a lick. And, you know, she learned to dance a little. But mostly, as everyone says, her partner, Mark, is just dragging her around, right?
She's kind of stomping.
Yeah. Jennifer Grey, though, was in Dirty Dancing. So isn't that sort of unfair pairing?
Well, that's what people say. But, yeah, I mean, they throw in a few people who have had some dance experience. I don't know.
Brandy,
their formula.
Who wowed the judges with her sultry tango. I think she got a perfect score. So who does vote? Obviously, people who really, really care, like Dujan, the conservative blogger. And so they now have a Team Bristol Monday night dancing watch party. And they have all these conservative websites that are encouraging people not just to vote, but to vote as many times as you can. At this point in the season, there's a limit of like 5 votes per phone number and email address. And if anybody's wondering, how the hell does Werby know this or even care? I'm reading it. So they have, Team Bristol. It's all connected up with the Palin websites. And Palin operatives are directly involved in all this. Well, here's what it's all about.
Don't they have more important things to do?
No. It's not that they're just wasting their time. This is part of the whole mediaization of politics. And in one article, they referred to Sarah Palin as a media celebrity. So there's this merging of entertainment and politics. And it's almost, let me put it another way. It's not almost. It exactly is a hopeless hopeless population who feel that there's no way in the world can they really affect the elite control of this society in the issues that really determine what our lives are going to be all about. Whether you're in your 40s or 50s, whether you're talking about your grandparents or whether you're in your teens. Look at France. They were going to raise the retirement age 2 years and hundreds of thousands of high school students came out and protested.
Amazing.
Yeah, it wasn't there going, grandma and grandpa, they're already retired. They were thinking in advance. They were thinking about the quality of life in France. In Britain, the same thing. They were going to raise the fees greatly for college. It used to be free, as it should be in countries, in wealthy countries like ours in Britain. But the conservatives there decided they're going to raise the tuition. So 50,000 people, students and parents and teachers, marched down the street here. They go, well, we're going to vote for Bristol Palin.
It's pathetic. It really is sad.
Here's what it's been alleged that the Tea Party's Operation Bristol is keeping the teen mom in the competition. That's another thing. I mean, this young woman contravenes every bit of these family values by having a child out of wedlock. It doesn't mean anything to liberals. I mean, I just hope she's happy. I hope that the baby has a good home.
Oh, that poor kid.
Yeah. Someone wrote in, though, I will not vote for that tacky bit of TV trash. She should be home taking care of the baby and trying to find a good husband.
Yeah. Or a job.
A job.
A real job.
She doesn't need a real job.
Yeah, she's fine. You're right.
She, I think she gets like 20 grand every time she speaks. She goes and she now, of course.
Bristol Palin?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Oh, mom gets a lot more than that.
She gets big bucks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, by the way, and I'm surprised if there's not somebody calling in saying, you are doing the Palins. You are doing the Palins such a favor by continuing to talk about him. It's the P.T. Barnum thing. Any publicity is good publicity as long as you spell the name correctly.
Yeah, right.
So we're doing it. But I just want to get into this a little. This is from Jezebel.com. You know that website?
I don't.
Kind of a gossipy, media entertainment site. The real conspiracy is that her conservative supporters have figured out a way to exploit ABC.com's emailing voting feature, allowing infinite votes. While Bristol Palin denies any Tea Party conspiracy theories, there's no denying that conservatives have been pushing for votes for Bristol using blogs and Twitter to start a movement. Now, again, they don't care about talent and they don't care about democracy. They care about their capacity to win no matter what. I mean, the whole idea of fairness, it's not there. So here's what was on their website. Here's a hint. They don't have to be valid email addresses to register with ABC.com. There's no validation process. They just have to be formatted like a valid email address, and you must use a valid zip code and a birthday that makes you old enough to vote. Let's see. No, it doesn't have to be a valid email address. I had one of my anonymous ones, but I just use it. But here, got my 80 votes in online. Took 2 hours. I am beat. This is a conservative.
Oh, my gosh.
Project Operation Bristol voter.
Oh, geez.
I only got 42 in, and I have some catching up to do. And then the last person writes, Lord have mercy. I voted for 3 hours online. I got 300 votes in.
Oh, I don't even know what to say.
So why, as this one, this tacky bit of TV trash, is why someone wrote, why is she still in there? It's because of that. Sarah's got a new book out. She's harshly critical of Levi Johnston.
These people are so ridiculous. Yeah.
And even so, on the night of the midterm elections earlier this month, Sarah Palin stayed up till 3 in the morning watching all of the Mama Grizzlies get trashed, by the way.
Yeah.
She did not do well. Congratulating winners, consoling losers, while reading others from people who wanted to know that they'd cast their vote for her daughter, Bristol, in Dancing with the Stars.
She had a big night. Big night.
Yeah. Let's see. Bristol's mom, Sarah Palin. This is from showbizspy.com.
Haven't heard of that one either.
No. Hey, if you want to weigh in on this or anything else, maybe something more important, but it just is important to realize the mindset of these people, how basically anti-democratic they are. You start off with this, I mean, this kind of corruption, and it's a short jump to fascism. Because, you know, the Nazis, you say, oh, man, what a, you know, throwing the N-word around and the Nazi word here. But there is a fascist mentality, and it is exhibited by these conservatives. Anyway, Bristol's mom, Sarah Palin, is reportedly desperate for her daughter to win the show. Sarah's determined to make Bristol the winner of the show, whatever it takes, an insider told the Pop Eater website. She's become obsessed with it, as if it were the election all over again, except this time, a Palin will be the winner. Sarah's making it very clear she wants Bristol to win. This is her chance to get even and show all those Democrats that a regular girl with conservative values and common sense can win it all, like getting pregnant.
Yeah, right.
By a guy with a, what do you call those?
A very low IQ.
With a mullet.
Oh, geez.
Right. It is. This is interesting, too. Meanwhile, it has been claimed that Bristol has gained 15 pounds during her stint on Dancing with the Stars because she keeps eating junk food. Everyone else always talks about, man, how much weight they lost.
Great shape.
Yeah, but she's been eating tons of fast food. She used to eat very healthy, but now she says she just doesn't have time. Even though she gets so much exercise in the show, she's not eating right. I heard someone say, this is... Oh, yeah, Rebecca Mansour, who's a lieutenant cyber messenger, she has something conservatives for Palin. Yeah, she works and is paid by Sarah Pack to write for Sarah. She has been urging people to vote. They aren't fans or even viewers of Dancing with the Stars, but they're members of a Palin political
movement.
Yeah. Now, this is very similar to what happened to the Dixie Chicks. Chicks, wonderful people. Wonderful people.
Love their music.
Yes, and said that they were ashamed. They were ashamed that that Bush was born in Texas, as they were.
Yep.
So suddenly, all these country stations were inundated by callers saying, "You got to get those people off our country station."
Yeah, they took them off.
And yeah, particularly Clear Channel. And these people, of course, folded. Well, it turned out that it wasn't the country music fans at all. It was Rush Limbaugh's The Drugster. That's what I like.
Ed Schultz
calls him
that.
The Drugster. Yeah, the Oxycontin freak. The Drugster had encouraged all of his non-country listening fans to pressure these stations into getting the Dixie Chicks off. Because the album that came out after that, it just went boom, went platinum.
Yeah, it was right. it was a good one.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it has stirred some emotions. I had one person say, I hope Bristol falls on her face and bloodies her nose, and her mom comes rushing over and slips on her ass in the blood. I went, hey, can we calm down? Can we just calm down a little?
Was this over breakfast?
I won't say it's anyone in my family.
Oh, my gosh.
Peter,
will you be watching?
You know what? I guess they have a, let me see. When's the, I think it's a 2-hour show tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wait, no.
Me neither.
No, I'm not going to watch.
No.
And I'm going to, and then the finals where they have all, three couples. I know all this from my wife.
Yeah. She's a fan of the ballroom dancing.
All right. But I want to get somebody on the air about this or anything else. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan with you on Night Call here. And our number is 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
And Stephanie is waiting to get your calls. Any vitriol, please expend it on us and not Stephanie, although she can handle herself quite well.
She can.
Yeah, like hanging up on your ass and and realizing since we have caller ID.
Yeah, no one's even done anything naughty tonight.
Since we have caller ID, if you get two...
Randy.
Or whatever. We'll
or whatever.
But, oh, yeah, you can email us as well at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And also, Facebook friends wanted, and always a lot of good stuff. Debbie in Northampton, as usual, big thanks to her.
Yes, thank you, Debbie.
And to Jalene as well. Okay, all right, so 313-298-WRIF. Let's get Brad in West Bloomfield on the air. Brad, hi, it's Peter and Jalene. Thanks for joining us on WRIF. Well, I did my usual. There you go,
Brad. It's a great radio show. I'm calling about this whole tea party, who I call the tea baggers.
That's what they called themselves, so they realized what morons they were and what it really meant.
Well, I think they should have stuck with the original title.
Me too.
I it's such a pain in the ass to hear about these guys and girls every single night of the week. They're just rusting out the American political scene with their, oh God, well, look at who they're putting up there. I love that, that Bristol Palin is getting $20,000 to speak when she barely knows 15 words in the English language.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, does she know, like, rap that rascal?
Yeah, right. And me being, you know, a 285-pound blues singer, I Bristol Palin getting $20,000 to speak is like me modeling Speedos on a runway. It just doesn't work.
I like rusting out the I'm stealing that from you, Brad. I love that phrase.
Seriously, seriously, the only thing I've been waiting for, and I've never watched Dancing with the Stars until this season because of all this hype behind Palin. And I got to tell you, the thing I'm waiting to see is Bristol Palin fall on her partner and crush the son of a bitch to death.
You're not even as bad.
This guy. She has to outweigh this guy by like 35, 40 pounds. I mean, if you look at the two side by side.
We get the point, Brad. We get that point. But
You know, maybe she should lay off the filet of fishes and
oh no! Thank you, Brad. Yeah. I forgot what even going to say.
How did that happen?
Yeah, I don't know. Listen, one of the things though, and there's a couple more comments on this Dancing with the Stars. Not many though, so maybe we could move on to something else. But Jared, we'll get your call on, so stay on here. On this must be Wednesday, the 24th. It is called Op-Out Day. I think that's the name of it. Let me get to the end of this. You know, there's this really has me perplexed. It's, yeah, opt out of Airport Scanners Day. I opt out for health and privacy. And there is a website called WeWon'tFly.com. WeWon'tFly.com without the apostrophe in there. And what this is all about, if you haven't seen this, is these new, what they call naked body scanners that can see everything, including your wee-wee and your woo-woo.
You can see, really?
Yeah. You got the woo-woo, I got the wee-wee.
Okay. Let's get that right.
Yeah. And so there's been all sorts of horror stories. And then if you say, I don't want this machine on me, then they
pat you down.
Yeah.
And it's a vigorous pat down.
They actually touch your breast, your genitals.
Yeah.
And so on one hand, I start thinking, that plane last Christmas did not crash with a bomb because that guy was so unfortunately so incompetent because this explosive material does not show up on like a metal detector.
Yes.
So here's the idea. We should be 100% safe. Well, as someone who flies 3-4 times a year, I like the general idea. And I don't want to be in a plane where some insane character working out some mad political scheme takes me and 250 other people out, right?
Right.
But do we want to be subjected to this? And now, apparently, the TSA, they're like doing this slowdown. They're like pissed off that everyone is being so critical of them. So there's these enormous lines now at the security check at the airports. So what do you think? How do we go on this? Do we deserve to be 100% safe, or does it, you know, whatever? I mean, you could make the argument that everybody would have to walk through this room naked.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, it pretty much is what it is.
Yeah, it is.
When I flew out to L.A. about a month and a half ago, I saw that full-body scanner. That they still, even at Detroit Metro, they still have just this metal detectors. Do you know that? Yeah. They have both. But this is one of the first airports to get that. And I looked over. I started to get in that line, and I was like, I didn't have anything to hide, but I was just like, oh, no. They're not looking at my organs.
Well, part of it is.
Or my woo-woo.
Yes, the debate. I mean, the debate takes on the life that it does. It was because we're under threat. And no one ever gets to the end of why are we at threat. I mean, as long as we're going to war against Muslim countries, as long as we're going to be intervening in disputes between the Israelis and the Palestinians, like 90% on the side of the Israelis, as long as we're going to be supporting Arab dictatorships that are our allies. You do know, right, folks, that with the exception of Iran, all the Muslim countries are U.S. allies that we spend hundreds of billions of dollars on, and mostly on military aid. As long as that keeps going on, we're going to assure that we are targets. Now, does that excuse the murderous acts or the intentions of murderous acts by these people? Of course not. And everything should be done to stop that. Everything should be done to apprehend them. Why do we ever look really at the causes of all this? This doesn't happen. But anybody have any experience with these naked body scanners?
I can't believe how many people are complaining.
Oh, yeah.
It's really amazing.
Yeah. And, I'm not sure how to really go about this. One of the things, there are people that are claiming also that there's health concerns about this. I was trying to find this quickly. I should have underlined it like I usually do, and I should turn my headphones down. See that? That little squeal there?
It's a bad... Yeah. Peter, no more!
Yeah.
It's a bad noise.
Yeah, it is bad noise. Yeah, it is. All right, let's take one more call before we go to our break. Here's Jared in Ann Arbor. Jared, hi, it's Peter and Jalene on WRIF. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how you doing?
We're good.
I just wanted to comment how you were talking about how the conservatives are rallying behind Palin and getting all their votes in and everything. I kind of think that's kind of what the Democrats did in to get Obama elected. They blogged on the internet about getting people who really didn't probably care about elections, got them to vote for someone with no talent and who really doesn't seem to care about democracy.
Well, you know, that's an opinion. No one's saying to. Yeah, I mean, that's just a political statement.
Really what happened? It was 8 years of Bush happened.
Yeah, I mean, there was a guy that was really dumb and didn't care about democracy and contravened democracy and lied about getting us into wars and ruined the economy and created the United States a structure so we could be called a torture state and all that. But, you know, there's a little bit of difference of encouraging people to take part in the democratic process. And it's actually insulting and with no basis that people voted that didn't care about the process at all. For one thing, you have absolutely no idea whatsoever about anyone's motivation. If you want to say, well, there was a lot less people that voted in the midterm elections, I'm sure that would do that's exactly what conservatives and Republicans want. They do everything they can to limit the voting. George W. Bush was president and got the opportunity to ruin this country because the suppression of votes in Florida and then Ohio. He stole both elections.
You still believe that, huh?
What do you mean, I still believe it? Why don't you believe it? Well, no answer to that one. All right, thank you. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Well, let's get this. Here's, I should go to break, but let's get Tommy in Monroe, the home of General George Custer and Fermi II. Go ahead, Tommy. You're on the air.
How you doing?
We're good. What's up?
I was at Detroit Metro last Tuesday. I was trying to fly to Kentucky for a couple days. And one of the TSA guys, it was me and my four-year-old daughter standing in line, and he was pretty animate about my four-year-old daughter going through these body scanners. And I got talking to the guy, and I was like, look, she's 4 years old. You know, I'm not letting her go through a naked body scanner. I don't care who sees it.
But wait a minute. Did you guys have anything to eat before you went on?
I'm sorry?
Did you have anything to eat? Did you have lunch or any?
Earlier.
Yeah, okay. Go ahead. Continue. Go ahead. Go ahead. This was, this is something extraneous. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, you're waiting for some McFlay of fish, you douchebag?
Oh,
jeez. Here's what Stephanie writes. Voice sounds familiar. Well, it did to us, too.
I still, now I think I've got it.
Yeah.
You knew.
Yeah. Hey, all right. Maybe I have underestimated the misunderestimated or something. But anyway, nobody wants to talk about the Dancing with the Stars, and that's to your credit. All right, so we got a lot of other stuff to talk about, and that's you know, they're coming for our wallets again. They thought haven't they done enough to us? Hasn't the distribution of income looted the middle class and the working class enough? And
now that's the Werby I know.
Yeah,
right,
yeah, yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Come on back.
But no, they're coming back. And they want more from us. And more on that when we come back.
You're listening to Nightfall with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Did you know that 65% of U.S. homes are under-insulated? So don't miss Lowe's insulation event going on right now. Purchase qualifying in-stock Johns Manville formaldehyde-free fiberglass insulation and get a Lowe's gift card worth up to $200 via mail-in rebate. Plus, insulation purchases before the end of the year qualify for a tax credit up to $1,500. So head over to Lowe's now or shop at Lowe's.com. Experience. Lowe's. Let's build something together. Offer valid now through December 13th. Some restrictions apply. See store for details. Valid in U.S. only.
Let's say you have a friend who likes music. Get her a Verizon smartphone with Pandora, or a cousin who loves social networking. Get that smartphone with Twitter, and they'll want their smartphone with America's best network. So come to Verizon for the BlackBerry Curve 3G. Now buy one for only $49.99 and get up to three free, each after $100 mail-in rebate debit card. And now, introducing a budget-friendly data package for only $15 monthly access for 150 megabytes. And Santa knows the best gifts need the best network. Shop early and save. Visit any Verizon store today, verizonwireless.com/holiday, or call 1-800-256-4646. Rule the air. Verizon. All phones require a new two-year activation and data pack. Early termination and other fees apply. Coverage details at verizonwireless.com.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging lime scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Would you like to own a brand new computer and improve your credit at the same time? If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, Tronics Country says you're approved, even if you have bad credit or no credit. Call now for your new computer and get a free 20-inch LCD TV and color printer with your paid purchase. Call 1-800-990-2258. 1-800-990-2258. That's 1-800-990-2258.
He ran for state office and was beaten. Started a business and failed. Ran for Congress and lost. But thankfully, Abraham Lincoln didn't give up. Perseverance. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. Well, we wasted a lot of time on Bristol Palin. What that represents, the absolute corruption of these conservatives that have Project Bristol, or Operation Bristol, I guess it is, and they're voting hundreds of times, taking advantage of the system. So they're really good about cheating in elections.
Got an email from Robert, who's listening in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. He's a union locomotive engineer and wanted to say, great show. Thanks for listening. Glad you found us.
That's the home of the drugster.
The drugster, yes.
Yeah, that's where he's from. Let's see. What we were also talking about I Opt Out Day. In other words, people are going to refuse to be naked body scanned on Wednesday, November 24th, and that will mean every person has to be patted down. And so what I talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face or have alternative one way or the other, because if you do that, can you imagine how bad it is traveling around a holiday like Thanksgiving in any event? So it's going to be murderous. But I've talked to people, so I'm through flying. That's it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you got. I won't do that to myself. There's places I want to see.
Yeah.
All over.
Yeah, right. And they're hard to walk to.
Yeah.
One of the things about the scanner, remember, of all the many, many crimes of the Bush regime, one of was terrorizing us through all these alerts. Remember all the time they had these...
Red, yellow, orange, green.
Never got to green. Right. And the head of Homeland Security was this very, very bizarre character, Michael Chertoff. And thanks to Winston Smith, by the way, for sending this in. And guess who is a consultant to the company that makes the scanners?
This guy.
Michael Chertoff!
Hey! It always comes back around to the racket.
These guys are such criminals.
Yeah.
I just can't
Crooks.
Even believe it. Yeah. There's more. Let me see. What did... oh, yeah. This is... I sort of lost one of the... Oh, yeah. Here it is. And this is from... Joe in Taylor, I think. Somewhere like that. This is from the National Enquirer. Always a reliable source.
Oh, jeez.
Is Willow Palin about to have a baby?
Willow?
Yeah. Willow, the 16-year-old. The National Enquirer says she recently, quote, missed her period and took a pregnancy test. Can we trust the Enquirer? Oh, wait a minute. This is not... Oh, this is Wonkette. Sorry. This is Wonkette.com. How exactly do they keep track of the 16-year-old's ovulation cycle? Sure, we could trust them if they said John Edwards got her pregnant, although they don't appear to be saying that yet. But if you think about it, this story makes sense. Bristol became a well-paid public speaker and TV reality show contest because she had a teenage pregnancy. So perhaps Willow, like every teen in this situation, is making a smart entrepreneurial move, one that could begin with her attention-grabbing Facebook comments a few days back, where she was using these homophobic language. But perhaps this is a risky attempt to overshadow Bristol. The Enquirer seems to suggest she had an abortion.
Oh, gosh.
Pass it on. That's terrible, isn't it? Let me do one more thing. This is from Daywan Ron. Writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Does anyone remember that scene in the Governator's movie? Arnold Schwarzenegger's movie, Total Recall, when he walked through the security scanner at the Mars terminal that scanned all the way down to the skeleton. Funny how science fiction always seems to end up becoming science fact like that.
Wow.
I'm also boycotting Dancing with the Stars since Brandy got sent packing and Bristol was put through. I'm tired of these freak zombies worming their way into everything. Soon the normal, intelligent people will be burned at the stake again. Have a great night, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Palins are like this family on the block that on the face of it seem pretty nice, and they're very appealing people, often attractive, both looking, but they've always got some crisis, and there's always something going on, and always someone's always getting busted, and there's people...
They can't help themselves.
Yeah, right. And that's what these freaks are. Yeah, and
we're stuck with them.
We're doing a big favor.
And we are.
Yeah.
And here you go. Get off of it, Peter.
So open lines for you, 313-298-WRIF. But let's, I said earlier, the real important stuff and what this is a diversion from, although this gives you an idea how these people operate on all spheres, even something as with zero importance in the real scheme of things, they're scheming to circumvent democracy in order to, quote, win. They don't care about talent. They don't care about democracy.
They
want to win.
They don't care about you.
Yeah. So here's the deal. In the Detroit News the other day, November 18th, high teacher salaries under scrutiny in Michigan. Pay benefits may be squeezed as schools try to balance budgets.
I was amazed at this.
Because everyone knows.
Teachers are not highly paid.
Well, there's some of them are. State leaders grapple with a looming $1.6 billion deficit. Thousands of teachers know that they have a target on their back. Isn't that a sweet way to put it? Mm. These people that teach our children, that are responsible for the future citizens of this state and this country, our kids, they have a target on their back. And guess who has the target? Of course. The K-12 education, one of the state's largest expenses. Makes sense, doesn't it? Any funding cuts could put pressure on teacher compensation. Let's go down here. More than 300 teachers in the region make more than $100,000, double the median income, household income. And the average top wage for a teacher with a master's degree and roughly a decade of experience is nearly $82,000. Although starting teachers right out of college make roughly $40,000 in many area districts, they can earn well above $70,000 by age 30 if they get a master's degree in Troy schools. A 25-year teacher with a master's degree and 30 extra hours of education can make almost $100,000.
I had no idea.
However, the average Michigan teacher made $56,000 last year. So there's a few that are making a lot. And the state ranks 11th in the nation, so there's others that make that much as more as well. So the question is, let me put it another way. What should teachers be making? Huh? Should they not be making $100,000? How about $56,000? That's okay. Should they make $60,000? No. Well, I don't know really how to affix compensation. I know a considerable number of teachers. Mm-hmm. I was mentioning playing handball. How many of these guys are teachers? Couple of them like that. I have no idea what they make. Actually, one of them works at a private school, and I know they actually make less, even though it's
really?
A school for the wealthy. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the people that make money for one thing are teachers that are members of either the American Federation of Teachers or the NEA, the National Education Association. And here really is the rub, because as I've said so many times before, the attack on teachers, including like the documentary Waiting for Superman, is all about destroying it's got a number of aspects to it. First and foremost, among the power mongers on the far right, is to destroy the teachers' union, because they are this solidly Democratic Party organization that gives both election workers and also large amounts of funding to the Democratic Party. So for that reason, they want to destroy the unions. They also don't like what's generally called a liberal education. They want to be able to control education, so they have this far right wing Christian based curriculum. And also, they're just pathologically opposed to any ordinary working class or middle class person making a decent wage.
Yeah, that's for sure.
They love these millionaires and billionaires that are funding them, who they're the shock troops for. They're the cannon fodder for. And I said last week, these billionaires that are giving the money to the teabaggers, they wouldn't let the teabaggers in the same room with them. You know, like the Koch brothers, who are some of the big founders the Tea Party. They they're big supporters of Lincoln Center, the where they do classical music,
yeah,
and ballet and plays and all that. Can you imagine them sitting in their box with an average teabagger? They would go, oh, I don't think so. And of course, the funders, the Koch brothers and the rest of them, why are they funding all? They got billions already, but again, it's pathology. They don't have enough money somehow. It's not about money. They have everything they can buy, but they want to get rid of environmental controls on their energy businesses, for instance, so they'll make more money. They're just absolutely nuts. So how much should teachers make? Huh? And on the other hand, private college heads are getting these enormous rises in pay. The 30 presidents of private colleges have earned more than $1 million in total compensation in 2008, up from 23 the previous year. So we're in the middle of a recession, a depression, depending on where you're sitting. And seven more private college presidents got over $1 million. There was the highest paid college president was Bernard Bander, an Orthodox rabbi and sociologist who founded Touro College in 1970, and he was making almost $5 million when he died this year.
Wow.
Also in the top 10, Constantine Papadakis of Drexel University, and he was making $1,600,000. Second highest paid, $2,700,000, John R. Brazil of Trinity University in Texas, and it goes on and on like that. The top 10 included only one Ivy League president, Lee C. Bollinger of Columbia University, who I think what used to be the president of University of Michigan. The highest paid sitting president is R. Gerald Turner of Southern Methodist University, who earned
$2,774,000.
I mean, what could they build with all of that? All right, let's take some calls. 313-298-WRIF. That is
313-298-9743.
And here is Ron. Ron is in Lake Fort. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
We're good.
I just got to say, I know the teachers are losing a lot and this and that, but nobody ever talks about the bus drivers that get all their route times cut down to where they're getting full times 4 hours a day and starting to be outsourced and all this stuff. These bus drivers, I'll tell you what, the school districts, they're cheapening them up every year.
And sure they are.
That right out.
And, again, we talk about people that have our children in their hands.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, let me ask you this, Ron. Where is Lake Fort?
It's just north of Port Huron.
Okay. Well, because, I don't know, are your drivers unionized by any chance?
Oh, yes, they are. But, it's just a matter of time before they cut their insurance. And
sure.
They've cut their routes for the last few years, you know. Added more drivers, and they got less time on their, pay stuff. So.
Is it Teamsters?
I'm not sure what union it is. It is a union, though.
Okay, because a friend of mine is a school bus driver in Ann Arbor, and Ann Arbor decided to save money. It was going to privatize the drivers, and instead of making a middle-class wage that unions bring, they're going to pay somebody like $8 or $9 an hour. Mm. And so there was this big fight, and surprisingly, they decided, okay, we're not going to privatize it, and we're still going to have the union. And then they did something, maybe if he's listening, he would call in. He's got to get up at 5 in the morning.
Yeah, so, right.
So they consolidated all this, and just as you said, cut pay, raised the medical insurance. So it's all about these attacks on our standard of living, our pay scales, everything that people have won over the last two or three generations. And at the same time, you get these people at the top that are making more and more and more money, right?
Well, the school district hollers, they don't have money, but we've known it's been proven, and people know that they've got tons of money, and they're just hiding it.
Well, that's, like I say, there's this element of pathology there, and also it's, the gains that have come about on one hand by unions, but unions lead for all people. They create the standard of what the rest of, the workforce, even in the heyday of unions in the 40s and the 50s, the majority of private sector workers were never unionized, but that was the standard. They created the standard because the word union has become like a noun, but if you think what it is, it's a union of individual workers. And the individual workers up against a boss, a company, a corporation, has zero power. And that's the way they like it. You have a union of workers, and suddenly there's the power to do what happened during the 40s and 50s. And the corporation said, we got to regroup. We liked it better in the 19th century. And the Republicans, of course, are the leading edge of all this. All right, Ron, keep us abreast of what happens out there. Port Huron, by the way, did you know the city has been asking for donations?
Really?
Yeah, I mean, they're begging because of what's happening. In the meantime, paychecks for CEOs continue to climb. The chief executives of the largest U.S. public companies, which means ones that are traded, enjoyed bigger paychecks in their latest fiscal year. Share prices recovered. Profits soared amid the country's slow emergence from the recession. Now, that's not entirely accurate. The average person is experiencing a slow emergence from the recession. Mm-hmm. Richie Rich Kid, we've got to do this.
Yeah. Eat the rich. Eat the rich. Eat the rich.
All right, out of the palace, into the ditch. Or how about just, sharing some of this money? But anyway, let's see here. At these 456 companies, the median pre-tax value of CEO salaries, bonus and long-term incentives, such as grants of stock options, rose by 3% to 7.23 million dollars. That's the median pre-tax value. That, right in the middle. There's 50% make more, 50% make less. Investors made out well too, with a total shareholder return coming in at 29% more, right? So there's a slow recovery, not for these people. The company's total net income doubled from a year earlier to $510 billion. Wouldn't it be nice, maybe, that if they would give Port Huron a little bit of this?
A little dough.
How about
nice.
This guy?
Nice.
Ray R. Arani of Occidental Petroleum Corporation. His package for 2009 was $52 million.
Wow.
So it's...
I wonder if he's okay.
Yeah. I mean, look. Hey, Ray. You got $52.2 million. How about taking the .2, the $200,000?
Yeah.
Ship it off to Port Huron, all right?
In
so,
Asia.
Like our last caller wouldn't do it. Or how about if we just confiscate everything but about $2 million for the guy?
Well, there you go. Well, getting crazy again.
He earned it. let's see. Members of Congress are enjoying their own financial stimulus, despite a stubbornly sour national economy. Again, for most of us, congressional members' personal wealth collectively increased by more than 16% between 2008 and 2009. While some members' financial portfolios lost value, nearly half of them, 261, this is Senate and House of Representatives, 261 are millionaires. So we have, this is the ruling class both in terms of finances and politics. And, you know, you do have some millionaires, people that have...
a heart.
That have a heart. Mm-hmm. That actually care about the country. Yeah, you got people like Bill Gates' father, Bill Gates Sr., that belongs to something called responsible wealth, and he thinks that there ought to be higher taxes for the wealthy people and all that. But in the main, people seek their own interests, except for, like, the teabaggers and other nutballs like that, that say... Well, you know, they deserve it, and it's their money and what have you, even though the rich are getting richer and everybody else is getting poorer. You know, so they are carrying water for the ultra-rich. What is the matter with these people? Well, it's more. It's pathology. Let's see. And of these congressional millionaires, 55 had an average calculated wealth in 2009 of $10 million or more, with 8 in the $100 million-plus range, which includes Democrats, too. As well. That's probably like Senator Kerry of Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah. Very, very wealthy.
Yeah. In 2009, the median wealth of U.S. House members stood at $765,000, up from $645,000 the year before. The median wealth of a U.S. senator was nearly $2,380,000, up from whatever, up some, and on and on and on. So...
Wow.
Yeah.
Big bucks.
All right. Your thoughts. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Phil. Phil's in Westland. Hi, Phil. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Julian.
Hi.
Hi.
First time I've ever called in.
Well, welcome.
Welcome.
I had a little story about the body scanners. I went there last weekend for work, and when we went through, the guy behind me was flipping out, thinking he was going to have to go through there. And I just looked at him, and I told him that I saved a bunch of money, and I switched to Geico.
we have a new commercial?
All right. Thanks a lot. We got to do some commercials anyway.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
This is Matt Demmer from Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury. I'm here to tell you that now it's more important than ever to buy an American-made vehicle. We at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury are still in the business of leasing and want to help you. Whether you're looking for the hot new Lincoln MKS, the sleek Lincoln MKZ, or the hottest crossover vehicle, the Lincoln MKX, Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury in Dearborn is your one-stop shop. At our dealership, we believe in honesty, reliability, and support for our customers just like you. We encourage you to check out our virtual showroom on our website, Demmer.com. You can check out our vehicle inventory, and you can bet that if we don't have the vehicle you're in the market for, we'll do our very best to get it for you. While you're online, we invite you to get a no-obligation internet price quote. Whether you come into our newly renovated dealership or visit us online, we at Jack Demmer Lincoln Mercury invite you to experience the Demmer difference today. We're located on Michigan Avenue just east of Oakwood in Dearborn. Give us a call today, 313-274-8800. That's 313-274-8800. Or check us out on the web at Demmer.com.
Welcome to the REI Winter Sale. How may I help you?
Well, I'm looking for an all-mountain...
Arbor Flight snowboard?
You guessed it. And a protective...
Smith Allure helmet.
Perfect. And some
Merrill Encore Chilstitch shoes.
This is going to be a great winter.
We know what you need because we know what you love. Shop REI's winter sale and save up to 30% on select winter gear, outerwear, clothing, and boots. November 19th through the 29th. For more information, visit REI or REI.com. REI. Find out.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Give the KID some credit. When he throws a party, he goes big. January 15th at Ford Field, it's Kid Rock's 40th birthday bash. Listen for your chance to beat the box office from your concert station. 101 WRIF. The birthday that rocks. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second hour at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. I'm going to be interviewing Caroline Fraser. She's written Rewilding the World, Dispatches from the Conservation Revolution. She went all over the world talking about how people are trying to save the natural, not the, just the natural world, but the little species that are being run out because, you know, we want to put our lawn chairs everywhere so we can sit in them and drink light beer.
Yeah, right.
So that's at 1 a.m. I have another one after that. I can't remember what it is. But whatever. And one of the things we're talking about, I guess, good, no more Dancing with the Stars, crap-a-roo.
Move on.
Move on, yeah. On Wednesday, November 24th, it's I Opt Out Day. That's opting out of the naked body scanners, and that is going to be happening at the airport. So this has turned into like be this national movement, and the goal, according to WeWon'tFly.com, the goal of National Opt Out Day is to educate the traveling public about the airport naked body scanners and the new enhanced TSA groping so they can make an informed decision, force positive change on the TSA by slowing down their security theater with creative protest. Man, it's going to be tough traveling.
It's going to be rough on Wednesday.
Yeah. Show the airlines our consumer power so they will lobby the government on our behalf to get the naked body scanners removed and the TSA abolished.
Huh. Abolished.
That's what they say. Yeah, yeah. We Won't Fly co-founder George Donnelly says if the threat is Al-Qaeda, the TSA will never be a match for it. Al-Qaeda is networked and agile while the TSA is a lumbering top-down giant. We need decentralized security where those closest to the action can call the shots. There's 65,000 people in the TSA. And I said when we began talking about this an hour ago, that we're never getting to the root of this. The fact that the United States is at war in Muslim countries, that it intervenes in the Middle East, that it supports Arab dictators, and would it stop these crazy people from still trying to do damage to us? I don't know. It's worth a try because all of that they're pissed off about is shouldn't be done in the first place, and it would probably take a lot of fire out from under them to
yeah.
be sure.
Oh yeah,
to be sure.
John in Madison Heights sent an email to calltalkyes@yahoo.com to really make Airport Opt Out Day get noticed. Everyone should act as if the pat-down is extremely arousing. Very loudly at the start of patting. Ooh, touch my junk. I won't sue. Which I didn't even know this one.
Yeah, this man named John Tyner, he was going through the line. He said, don't touch my junk or I'll have you arrested. And it puts him into the don't tase me bro category.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, which hasn't totally died.
No.
And he said, think Meg Ryan from Harry Met Sally, which, funny enough, was on earlier today.
Yeah, and I'll have whatever she's
I'll
having.
I'll have what she's having.
I'll have what she's
I
having.
I saw that.
Yeah. Let's see. His statement to a TSA worker has been made into T-shirts and wraps and videos.
How did I miss that?
Don't touch my junk or I'll have you arrested. Where is this from? This is from, I'm reading from some newspaper, Greensboro, North Carolina. And it said, but what if he'd use an obscene slang term? It may have gone viral, but it would not have gone mainstream. I think it's possible that don't touch my what, or I'll have you arrested would be lost to time. What would newspapers and television stations have done with it? Newspapers might have printed penis. But I doubt the world's weirdest word. I don't know why. But they love to say it on TV, don't they? TV would have bleeped it out or ignored it entirely. But now, don't touch my junk or I'll have you arrested.
Right. Oh, God.
Where did I came up? Oh, yeah, when I was at the airport picking up my sister.
Yeah?
I started getting hassled by one of these airport cops. And it wasn't for
when you were like outside?
Yeah, but it was, I don't even want to go into it. But I looked down and he had a taser and I almost said to him,
oh, I'm so glad you didn't.
I'm glad.
You thought better.
Yeah. We've got some open lines for you. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Dan in Livonia. Hi, Dan. You're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Warby, Mrs. Jordan, how are you tonight?
Good.
Mrs. Jordan.
That's her mom.
I'll let my mom know.
Yeah, go ahead.
Right on.
You're on the air.
Excellent. Real quick, about these naked body scanners. You know, I've been on this planet for a little while to see for the past 15, 20 years the American people getting conditioned. We started with the checkpoints in different states to supposedly check for alcohol. Then our wonderful President George Bush with the Patriot Act in 2001, which kind of really reminded me of the Enabling Act that Hitler passed in 1933.
Ooh.
And now we have Airport Security Theater, the TSA, with these naked body scanners. And where I'm leaning with my question is I left Logan Airport. Last time I flew was back in June. And I left Logan Airport where the supposed hijacked airplanes had left to go crash in the World Trade Center, and I saw this guy going through Airport Security Theater, and he had gotten through with a knife. I can't really say how through the radio, but no naked body scanner would have stopped him.
No, I know. I've had people tell me, man, they had,
really?
That they've had their Swiss Army knife in their carry-on and were horrified to find it when they got to their destination. You know?
Absolutely. And I saw that one extreme case. So my question would lead to, do you think this is what the elite are trying to do to more or less condition the American people for what is to come in the future, which is more of a totalitarianistic society?
I don't think they sit down like
they implant the chip.
Yeah, I don't think they like meet in a room and say, all right, our next step on the way to totalitarian
or
domination.
Or that they have an ultimate plan already made.
But this has a way of building in that manner and with things in control. I mean, do they even need totalitarian control? It's like I said earlier, when the government starts messing with people in Greece or in France or in Britain, I mean, people come out. They start saying, hey, you know, you're not doing this to us. General strikes occur, big, huge marches, march down the street. We just go, yes, sir, thank you, sir. I mean, it's really quite pathetic, our lack of reaction to everything that's been done. I mean, the fact that I was reading before the break, that while these CEOs and these members of Congress are making more and more money, teachers' salaries are under attack. And the people that are making all this money, and both the senators and the CEO, don't really produce a damn thing. I mean, how is a guy worth over $50 million and they're crapping about 300 teachers making $100,000 a year who are these quality educators? All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. 313-298-WRIF. Here's Scott in Farmington Hills. Hi, Scott. Scope. Sorry, Scott. There you go. You're on the air. Sorry. Go ahead.
Hey, Mr. Werby, Jillian, how are you?
Hi.
Good.
Real quick, I didn't want to get off the subject of the scanners or anything, but I work for a local community college.
Uh-huh.
And you were talking about the unions and how the companies sometimes have the upper hand, and I've actually been wanting to call you guys on this for the past 3 weeks. We just elected the union, supposedly legally elected, a union executive steward. Supposedly, the union stewards are supposed to vote on who gets the executive spot.
Yeah.
There was a guy that was elected for our union, and from what I know about this gentleman, he is a company man. In the sense I say that he is union, but he's also, I don't know if, you know, you can say that he's got his head up somebody's, you know what, but.
Yeah, sure.
Exactly. He's a company man, and I talked to three different union stewards because we have quite a few campuses around here, and they said that they were never given the opportunity to vote on it, and that kind of scares me because I actually just obtained a job about a year ago, which you know, I'm not complaining. It's a very good job. You know, any job right now is a good job.
Sure.
But this is definitely with the benefits and everything, and being union is a great job. But
well,
it also kind of scares me, though.
Well, I'll tell you what happens. Any institution has the capacity to become overly bureaucratic and corrupt, and certainly we've seen in the past. I don't think it's quite as prevalent as it was, say, 20, 30, 40 years ago, that unions really became corrupt. I mean, we look at what the Teamsters were doing, the laborers. I mean, they had virtually turned into rackets. Teamster business agents were making, you know, and this is 20, 30 years ago, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars. They were sometimes literally they were in bed with the company completely. Oftentimes, even still, they were able to deliver benefits to their members. Not always. But one of the main reasons how this occurs is through lack of participation. And I know that when I talk to people that I know that are in the union movement, that a number of guys I know were presidents of UAW locals, and they were, you know, a model of who you would want as the head of a local. They just, you know, they would be like 400 or 500 people in the local, and they'd have a meeting, and 14 people would show up.
Mm, yeah.
So that lack of mass democracy in and what happens is people begin to see their union as sort of like a cleaners, you know, something you hire to do some service for you. They take care of grievances if you ever need it. They do the bargaining and negotiating to provide, you know, protect your rights and what have you. And then all of a sudden, I think what happens is that that guys at the top can be they can be seduced by the capacity to make money, and they become really friendly with the people in the company, which is not, you know, not bad in itself, but the capacity there when you stop it being a mass movement means that you can wind up with some of the stuff that you're talking about. So it's all about participation. All right, Scott, thank you. But keep us informed about this as we go along as well. All right, let's talk about a few other things. By the way, open lines for you, 313-298-WRIF.
313-298-9743.
Now, there were some votes in Congress, and they're all about making life worse for all of us, right? And, for instance, the Republicans voted against jobless benefits for people whose benefits are about to expire because they couldn't care less about people. On the other hand, they're fighting like hell to continue the tax gift to the richest Americans that George Bush gave his buddies. And, you know, like, they don't want to extend unemployment benefits for the middle class. One of the things they also put in there, they wanted to completely defund National Public Radio. And,
really?
And also they're talking about limiting funds from public broadcasting system, PBS. So they're trying to, they want to get rid of public PBS.
Wow.
And NBR because they say it's this liberal network. You know, people like a lot of us, we call NPR nationalistic Pentagon radio.
Not liberal enough.
Yeah, well, because
it has its moments.
It has its moments, but when it comes down to things like wars, they're slapping on the helmets, and just like the mainstream media, the critics of the war are just absolutely marginalized if given any representation at all. So, are they going to get rid of NPR? No, of course not. They're not going to do it. But what they really want to do, and what votes like this are about, is to bring them to heel. Like, for instance, there were these awards on PBS, which were the Kennedy Center's Mark Twain Prize for American Humor.
I saw some of that.
And
Tina
it
Fey.
Went to Tina Fey.
Yeah, I love
right.
her.
So Tina Fey, who's well known,
she's on 30 Rock, but she she was head writer of
SNL.
Saturday Night Live and on there.
Yeah, right.
Update and, all.
And she always did these imitations of Sarah Palin. So she was on there, and here's one of the things she said. And you know, politics aside, the success of Sarah Palin and women like her is good for all women. Well, except, of course, those who will end up, you know, like paying for their own rape kit and stuff, because that's what Sarah Palin did when she was
governor,
mayor of Wasilla. She made women who are raped pay for the rape kit.
She is such a sweetie.
Yeah. Tina Fey said, but for everyone else, it's a win-win. Well, unless you're a gay woman who wants to marry your partner of 20 years, whatever. And for most women, the success of conservative women is good for all of us. Unless you believe in evolution, you know, actually, I take it back. The whole thing's a disaster. PBS chose not to broadcast it. And this is the strategy. This is the strategy of the Republicans who say they're trying to defund, completely deny funds to PBS and to NPR. So. 313-298.
Did not know that part.
Yeah, yeah. So, one in popular culture as well, your favorite, the Barefoot Bandit.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
I hate to say I love this guy, but...
Colton Harris Moore.
Fascinated, maybe more.
Yeah. He pleaded not guilty on Thursday to federal charges that include interstate transportation of stolen aircraft and being a fugitive in possession of a firearm. If you don't know about this guy, this moniker was coined for him after... He did all of these crimes without socks or shoes, and he stole an airplane and...
Airplanes and boats and vehicles and self-taught pilot.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that. What was that one movie, Catch Me If You Can?
Yeah, exactly.
With DiCaprio.
Yeah.
God.
DiCaprio, by the way, you know, our friend and colleague Tom Hartman, the talk show host.
Yeah.
He has co-authored... Oh. Today is the, 47th anniversary of the assassination of John Kennedy.
Oh, that's right.
The 22nd. Yeah. And are there still people out there that think Lee Harvey Oswald did it? I don't think so.
Don't you think there are?
Yeah, there are a few.
Yeah, there's a lot.
But most people think it was a conspiracy. They do.
Yeah, right.
Anyway,
right. FBI,
so DiCaprio, CIA. Yeah, DiCaprio, who is a big fan of Tom Hartman, pardon me, is going to star in this movie based on this book called, and I've interviewed his co-author, actually, come to work unprepared. This is extemporaneous, folks, so don't blame me. His last name is Waldron, and he wrote a book about the Kennedy assassination. Someone emails us, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. So there's going to be another film. Remember there was the Oliver Stone movie, JFK?
Yes.
Yeah, so maybe this will be, except now, here I interviewed him. Who does he say? That's right. Waldron and Hartman say it was the mafia behind it. They've written two enormous tomes, which I mean, the details I can't get through, but I don't know. The mafia, they were pissed because Bobby was on the mafia's case. I got an idea. Let's shoot the president. That'll take the heat off us. Doesn't make a sense. A lot of sense to me. But be that what it may. Here is Brandon in Ann Arbor. Hi, Brandon. You're on the air. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. What's up?
Click.
Oh, sorry. What? You know, I am clicking.
You're not clicking hard enough.
Brandon, now you are on the air. Go ahead.
Okay, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, I just like to say, man, I listen to your show and I love it. And I'm 26 years old, and I voted for President Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now at this point in his presidency and just what I've learned along the years, I don't agree with it, man. And here's what I say. Okay, here's what gets me. And I've heard a lot of people say this, is that we've, all the people, all the middle class, I make less than $20,000 a year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I voted Republican in the midterms.
You voted for these billionaires? What's the matter with you?
Well, here's the thing, man. Trickle-down economics is a theory.
Yeah,
right?
Which doesn't work.
Right,
it's trickling up.
Right. How does me voting Republican affect me?
Well, you know what? It probably won't. Let me put it another way.
So you're helping them.
Yeah.
You're helping the corporation.
Yeah. Their whole strategy is to loot the classes below them. So you heard me probably earlier talking about how they've made more and more money all the time, whereas the middle class and the lower working class, which is okay to be in because you're in there with tens of millions of Americans, probably 100 million or something like that, that's where their money is coming from. I mean, there's a certain amount of money, and I mean, if they can increase the monetary supply, which there's some talk of, or they're doing it to some extent, but in the main, there's a big pot of money, and the political and social question is, how is it going to be distributed? Their idea is get a lot of money for them and have Brandon and the rest of the people make less and less.
Okay, but here's my point, is how am I voting out of my economic interest?
Because
how am I doing that?
Because these people that you voted for only care about the corporations, and they really only care about people who make more than $200,000 a year.
Or more.
And you make, what, 10% of that?
Yeah, let me ask you one. Let me ask you a question, Brandon. And that is, do you really think anything's going to change?
Okay.
No.
Here's my point.
These rich people.
Yeah.
are they, okay, their money is going to go to one of two things. It's going to go, okay, if they tax them, it's going to go to government programs, which is going to extend welfare. It's going to extend.
No, 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 they don't extend welfare. What it does and what it could do would be, for one thing, how about raising the minimum wage to like $11 or $12 an hour for companies that have over 100 employees? I don't know who
that might help you, right?
How about free college education? How about free health care like they have in all the other countries of the world? How about having great schools for our kids that have maybe 15 kids in the classroom? How about, you know, you could just go on and on. How about the most wonderful roads, and how about no slums, and how about all of that? But instead, it all gets impacted at the top. You know, what you're saying, Brandon, is essentially Reaganomics. And their deal was that if you take the restraints off the accumulation of wealth, the ultra-rich people will use this to do investments in the economy and hence create more jobs and expand the wealth for everybody. All boats will rise. But you can't just keep investing and creating more and more production. In fact, we have a crisis of overproduction now, and also the Republicans are all about sending these jobs overseas. So what they did with the extra amount of money that they had that was given to them by Bush and the rest of them was to invest it. So that's why they're making more and more money, and there's not a single other job been made, and no money is trickling down. It is rushing upwards.
Irregardless, my vote.
It's not a word.
That's called a Bugs Bunnyism, but go ahead.
My economic did not affect, you know, I did not screw myself over by that vote.
Oh, okay. You're welcome to your opinion.
And I don't mean to be mean or anything, but irregardless is not a word.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. It's just regardless.
Strike it from your vocabulary.
That's right. You know,
it
so
will
you're,
behoove
you're
you.
Being one of those elitists.
I'm okay with that because that word gets under my skin. You don't care.
I don't care. Yeah. Here's Sean.
We
and,
can choose our battles.
Claire. Hi, Sean. You're on the air. Claire, it's quite a ways away, isn't it?
Yeah.
What a drive. Yep.
Yeah.
I've been there.
I've been through there.
Yeah, through there.
Go ahead.
Well, I can tell you a little bit about teacher salaries if you want.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. I'm a teacher right now, about 8 years. I'm not going to disclose the school district. I make a decent wage. It's about mid-50s. But the wages for the teachers across the state vary greatly.
Sure.
You know, you're in the Metro Detroit area. You bump up quite a bit. You know, on the other hand, guess what? It costs a lot more to live that way. So it's pretty comfortable, at least. But, however, when I did graduate, the first place we got, my wife and I, we got a trailer.
Yeah.
And we qualified for food stamps.
Wow.
So it's not like, it's not necessarily a great wage that you begin with. Right now it's a little bit better than it had been, but, you know.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. You know,
Are you, is your teaching staff unionized?
The teaching staff at a high school I work at is.
Yeah.
I work at a community college, and it's not. And it happens to be the lowest pay for any of the community colleges in Michigan.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
So, there's a few teachers that are doing really, really well, but it doesn't really represent the majority of us.
No, I know. And it's kind of hard. It's interesting to figure out what people should get. In other words, you say, well, what about a sports star? What about a movie star? What about a CEO? I mean, why suddenly do they think that teachers should make whatever? I don't, where, how do you set the limit? I mean, when they talk about, you know, these defenders of the rich, when they talk about CEOs, they think, oh, it's all they can get. It's okay. Or a sports star or a movie star or something. Yeah, whatever. You know, they can get all the money in the world. Teachers, because of negotiations with the school districts, you know, they can bid those their salaries up. I mean, we are in hard times, and again, what I was talking about earlier about getting to the root of the problem, it could very well be that school districts cannot afford some salaries. But the question is then, why in the richest country in the world are so many school districts, so many cities, the state of Michigan almost bankrupt? Whereas we're spending, I forget, where was this thing? Something, I'll have to get it, on refueling tankers, you know, for the Air Force and what have you. All right. Thanks for bringing that up. Appreciate it.
Peter Steve wrote in that the name of the author you were thinking of for the JFK.
Yeah.
Lamar Waldron.
Yeah, thank you.
Steve.
Yeah. What did he say the name of the book by any chance?
He did not, but I bet you now he'll email back.
Right. Yeah, here. The Air Force has made another potentially serious mistake in its effort to buy $35 billion of aerial tankers. And then they did something wrong in the bidding process. But that's the military-industrial complex. So
yeah,
it's $35 billion. Well, you know, that's this could be some jobs there. Well, there are a few, to be sure. But this is a high, high capital-intensive work and not labor-intensive. So you don't get much bang for your buck. And this is wealth transfer. That's what happens in tax. They take the money, the wealth we have, they turn it over to the government, and you could use it any number of ways. Like I was saying to Brandon from Ann Arbor, you could use it for free college tuition, you could use it for roads and schools, mm-hmm. or you could give it to Northrop Grumman and Airbus and EADS, you know, what have you. And
really quite a no-brainer, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, and the military-industrial complex has to keep identifying enemies, even though we're the enemies. I mean, why is Obama now all about a NATO missile shield for Europe? It's to protect against an Iranian attack. I mean, is there anybody that realistically in NATO in these North Atlantic again. Yeah, because this is aimed at Russia, and Russia knows it. And they say, oh, hey, Russia, you can be part of it. But they know the deal. So why is there a potential for conflict with Russia? Why is there a potential for conflict with China? Iran is not going to nuke anyone, because if they did, they would get obliterated in about a half a second. They might get obliterated by Israel in any event. So this is just insane. It makes the world less safe, and Obama is presiding over this. This is Bush policy, and you see the continuity of the military-industrial complex no matter what party is in power. All right, we will take a break, and let's see. Fred and Craig and Brandon and Ron, hang on. We'll be right with you.
You're listening to Nightfall with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging limescale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Limescale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Would you like to own a brand new computer and improve your credit at the same time? If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, Tronix Country says you're approved, even if you have bad credit or no credit. Call now for your new computer and get a free 20-inch LCD TV and Keller printer with your paid purchase. Call 1-800-990-2258. 1-800-990-2258. That's 1-800-990-2258.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
He ran for state office and was beaten. Started a business and failed. Ran for Congress and lost. But thankfully, Abraham Lincoln didn't give up. Perseverance. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome to our final segment, and you can always join us on Facebook as well. Well, Julene, Detroit didn't come in number one, but this is good.
Right.
Although we're on the list of most dangerous U.S. cities, number one, St. Louis, took over from Camden, New Jersey. I can't imagine what it's like. I mean, Camden makes Detroit look like...
Does it really? Clearly.
Yeah. Detroit was number three, Flint number four, Oakland, California, rounded out the top five of... the most dangerous cities. The safest city in America with more than 75,000 residents was Colony, New York. Never heard of it.
Sounds quaint.
Yeah. They had, let's see, St. Louis had over 2,000 violent crimes per 100,000 residents, whereas the national average is 429. Even that's a lot.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah. Then we have something else.
I wonder what happened to Miami.
Irregardless of all this. Yeah, you were badgering Brandon from Ann Arbor about using the word irregardless.
I nicely badgered him.
But Harold wrote in to
calltalkyes@yahoo.com
that it is in the dictionary but says it's non-standard and...
don't use it.
Or incorrect. Yeah. I mean, listen, the language always changes. And,
it's true.
And it's kind of strange. On one hand, defense of language as it's currently constituted is very conservative. You want to conserve the way it is.
I'm conservative?
But,
wow.
Well, like Shakespeare.
On one thing.
Shakespeare, I don't know how he did this, made up jillions
of
words.
A lot of words, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how did people know what he was saying?
Well, you know, was it Webster's that added refutiate? Did you know that? Someone back me up on this. I read a couple of stories.
Well, yeah. There's a lot of things.
Remember the Sarah Palin word? Refutiate?
Yeah.
She came up with this in the last year?
Yeah, that's a real
word.
They
added it.
Oh, they added it. Well, did you know that gullible is not in the dictionary?
Oh, don't even go there with me again. You got me about 12 years ago on that one. You'll never get me again.
All right, but you would use what you want, but...
I recommend you don't.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help you, man.
Right, right. In the business world, you actually got to pay attention to stuff like that.
Yeah.
Right. Here, let's see, a number of people wrote in to say the Waldron-Hartman book is Legacy of Secrets. I'm sorry. The Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination.
And that sounds like a Hartman title,
yeah,
doesn't
didn't
it?
Didn't somebody, Joni writes in, that PBS in Boston showed the Tina Fey Mark Twain show where she bashed Sarah Palin. Yeah. Okay. Let's go back to our phones. And here is another Brandon. This one in Milford, though. Hi, Brandon. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing tonight?
We're good.
Good. Hey, well, the other Brandon actually spoke about something very, very interesting. Not quite the Obama thing, so there's not a whole lot to say about that, but the Republican vote. And I myself am Republican. For a long time, I kind of was wishy-washy, but just due to faith, I am a Christian. I do vote Republican for Christian views, but as far as getting that out of the way...
Wouldn't you say that in terms... of hypocrisy, the Republicans that are always making all this noise about their Christianity and all that are just this pack of frauds that are always getting caught up somebody's pants?
Yeah, no, and then don't get me wrong. Yes, everybody's a hypocrite. Nobody's perfect. But just a few of the views, pro-life, some of these other things that kind of stand out above all from that aspect. I mean, you can pick a black sheep out of Republican crew just as much as you can pick a black sheep out of Democrat. I mean, that goes both ways. But overall, that's why I shoot Republican. But I was just saying that to say that, but I vote Republican as far as political views outside of that. Due to what he said specifically as far as when he voted as far as helping what you're saying, the corporate area. And this is kind of the reason I stand on this, and I stand on it a little bit more than what he said. I don't think voting a Republican to help us younger middle class, excuse me, it's not going to stand alone just by helping corporate gain more money. For many reasons that you said, you know, wealth keeps on going up, the thing and doesn't trickle down.
Don't you think that's what the Republicans are all about?
Not necessarily.
Well,
I think. Hold on one second.
Go ahead.
I think that mixed with something else that hasn't been done for many, many political reasons that I don't agree with. I think helping corporate because no matter what you say or I say, the people that allow us to have a job right now, unfortunately, are those people making a lot of money.
There we go.
Your job's held by somebody high up in corporate just as much as my job's held by someone.
Well, so then we got to say, we come with our hat in our hand, we say, yes, sir, thank you, sir.
May I please have some porridge?
Yeah, please. I mean, come on, we're going back to Dickens, England in the 1840s.
Again, I said I don't agree with it, but unfortunately, depending on the type of business you're in, that's how it is. You know, unless you're going to be industrial and be a lot like the baby boomers and start your own business, I mean, that's just the kind of the way it is right now.
Well, it is the way it is, but like I used the examples earlier of people in other countries that just don't take this, that they move in an assertive way against this assault on their standard of living, where we're just saying, in a way, Brandon, you are right, because there is no what they call agency. That is, there's no form, there's no political party, there's no mass unionization the way they have, for instance, in France, that takes on these issues. That's really a resistance to what's happening to the average person in this country. So we are faced with being this atomized mass that has no power whatsoever. So Brandon from Milford against some big corporation, you're right. You know, I don't know if you've heard the show before, but what I always say then, why don't we just thatch our roofs and admit that we're peasants and hope that the lords don't screw us too badly?
But I think there's a brighter side of that whole ordeal, okay?
What's that?
This is kind of the second point I wanted to bring up. Do we need to help corporate? Nobody wants to right now. It's true. But do we need to in a way? Yes. And the only reason I agree to help corporate and the only way I believe it could work is if we take care of an area that every single person that's been in the office is too afraid to handle, and that's taxes and tariffs. Okay? You're correct. We cut down taxes. They make more money because if you have $1 billion, why not have $2 billion? They're going to keep on soaking up the money and keep on globalizing the companies because it's still continually needs to be cheaper to do that. But if you help corporate, help them make more money, but at the same time fix taxes and tariffs to where it's cheaper, or if not, maybe even the same, to make things and build things in this place, it's going to create more jobs. It's going to
happen. But they're not going to do that. That didn't happen. I mean, I just talked about that before. That's Reaganomics. You take off the taxes and you take off the restrictions and the regulations, and then corporations will have more money to invest in the American economy. Well, they didn't do that because one of the things they want to do is they want to reduce their variable cost. With variable cost is only virtually one thing, and that's the cost of labor. And labor is so cheap in other countries that they can actually afford to make industrial products there and ship it back here. The strategy of these economic elites now, and the leading edge of it is run by the Republicans, is to drive wages down to the point where, yeah, they can probably have some jobs here, because they, if they can get them down to $3 an hour, then they won't have to, they can say, hey, we won't make them there anymore. Yeah, I mean, get rid of these unions, get rid of minimum wage laws, and because some of these teabaggers say the laws are unconstitutional, let the market determine the price of labor. And, of course, when there's so many of us out of work, the price of labor will drop precipitously. And soon they'll be saying, well, hey, we'll start making shoes again here. And we don't have to pay people middle-class wages or union wages. And we're going to get rid of Social Security, or at least knock it down considerably. So that won't be a cost either. So it's what I say. It's capitalist blackmail. You know, are you going to have a work for peasant wages, or the wages that our grandfathers fought to raise, or are you going to be unemployed? It's not much of a choice. But Brandon, thank you very much. Appreciate your cost, your call. Why did I say cost? Because I was reading something. World comparison shows U.S. healthcare lacking. This is from Reuters. A third of Americans say they have gone without medical care or skipped filling a prescription because of cost, compared to 5% of people in the Netherlands. The study is the latest in a series by the nonprofit Commonwealth Fund that shows that while Americans pay far more per capita for healthcare, they are unhappier with the results and less healthy than people in other rich countries. The study published in the journal Health Affairs also showed that 20% of U.S. adults had major problems paying medical bills, compared with 2% in Britain and 9% in France, which is the next costliest country.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. Let's see here. 70% of adults in the United States said they were confident that they could get more, get the most effective treatment if ill, if compared with 90% of Britons. Remember that conservatives are always bashing British health care? Well, 90% of Britons and 89% of the Swiss say they could get the health care that they need. All right, here is Ron in Detroit. Hi, Ron, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going?
Going good.
Hey, listen, since I got on the phone, there's been so many topics I want to touch on, but the main thing is President Obama and his ideal as far as trying to follow the principles of Abraham Lincoln, which was a great man, but he was very passive, he was very patient, and President Obama is trying to do the same right now, but that worked 300 years ago. It just doesn't work today, it seems to me. I don't understand. I want a Democrat to have somebody out there who has a backbone. And I heard your show a couple of weeks ago when you ran down all the things that I didn't know that the Democrats had done for the people, that the people don't know. And they wouldn't run on those tickets. They wouldn't run on those things that they've done for people, and the people just didn't know. Now some of these things are coming out, and people are saying, oh, like the two Brandons, they're called, the first young man, the first young man who didn't know he voted for Republican. Had he known, maybe he would have voted for Democrat. And the other Brandon, who is Republican, who needs to be a Democrat because he doesn't make enough money, will say, hey, well, these people are actually doing this. Democrats are doing something for me.
Maybe we should run that list more often.
Yeah, you know, actually, I was going to bring it tonight, and I didn't. What Ron is talking about is this list of all these bills that the Democrats passed, like credit card reform, and I can't remember better. You know, easier loans for college tuition and the control of them. You know, to stop students from getting gouged and on like that. Yeah, I agree.
Right. Right. And it's appalling that they're scared. They're doing this in secrecy, and then they're scared. And then the health care bill, yes, that's what we passed it. And so what? Everybody who was aggressive, even some Democrats who got reelected, they were aggressive. And they were aggressive in your face. That's the kind of people we have, society we have today. We have to be aggressive in your face. And they won their races.
Yeah, they did. You know, and all over you see the people are imploring President Obama before the election, after the election, to go for the throat. I mean, particularly now, between now and January 1st, the Democrats ought to just do what they got to do to get the people in, like, for instance, all these judgeships, get treaties passed. They can pass. You know, say, well, what about the filibuster? They can, what is it, by reconciliation, this process where they can pass bills with just 50%. They don't need this filibuster-proof majority and all that. Yeah, he's got to do it. He's got to do it indeed. All right, Ron, thank you very much. Thanks for calling us at 313-298-WRIF. Here is Fred. Fred is in Detroit as well. Hi, Fred. You're on the air.
Good morning, Jalene and Peter.
Hi.
Hi, Fred.
Okay. Well, first of all, let me say I'm a frontline independent lens and needs no watcher, so I was sad to hear that PBS ran for cover.
Yeah.
And then to the two Brandons, the first thing I want to remind them of is that the rich spend, and everybody knows this, they spend a smaller percentage of their income in this society than those of us down here in the trenches.
Sure. Thank you.
So they don't need any help. We need the help.
You know, Fred, I've said this a couple of times in shows gone by, is that Warren Buffett, one of the richest men in the world, he said that if his wealth and income was reduced by 99%, his lifestyle wouldn't change a bit. And what would happen to you or me if our income was reduced by 99%?
Oh, no.
We'd be gone.
Exactly. Being under a bridge somewhere.
Exactly.
And then the second point, especially to Mr. Goody Goody, the last Brandon, I couldn't vote. I didn't bring myself, whether rich or poor, to vote Republican ever, because I haven't forgotten about the stolen elections. I haven't forgotten about them outing a CIA agent. I haven't forgotten about Jack Abramoff and the K Street gang, or the maligning of John Kerry's service record. I haven't forgotten any of that.
Well, you know what, Fred?
Good for you.
95% of the people probably already have. In fact,
you reminded me of a couple things. No.
Yeah, right. Me too. People's historical memory, probably is about 3 weeks. By the way, you mentioned the Valerie Plame case, and most people are probably scratching their head. I don't want to get it, but this is the Bush administration outed the CIA agent and because they were trying to punish her husband for not going along with the fake evidence about Saddam Hussein having weapons of mass destruction. But I wonder, Fred, if you and others know that there is a film that's beginning at the main theater in Royal Oak called Fair Game that is about that case, and it was done by the guy, directed by the man who did all the Bourne films, Bourne Identity.
Oh,
and
okay. I'll check that out then.
Yes.
So I'm going to go. Yeah, that ought to be a great film. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate you calling.
And never forget. Hang on to that.
Never forgive, never forget.
Right.
Right. Here's Brian in Brighton. Brian, hi. You're on the air.
How are you doing tonight?
We're good.
I just like to hear your opinions on the Republicans pretty much rule in the House now.
Well, they don't till January 1st, so the Democrats, if they
need to
have their poop together,
get on it.
They can pass a lot of good legislation like they've already done. In fact, what they ought to do, they ought to just take like this health plan, get rid of the worst things that they compromised on, and pass some things that are decent. Pass this public option, because already, we see these health companies are raising prices and hurting more people and denying service.
You don't think that much is going to change, do you, Peter?
Yeah. I mean, things are going to be a mess after January 1st, Brian, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Appreciate your call here. And I was afraid we were going to be a national show only. But Mike is calling in from Canada, making our program international. Thank you. Where are you calling from, Mike?
Peter.
Oh, I didn't do it.
You're starting and ending.
Sorry. Mike, go ahead. I'm sorry. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Windsor.
Oh, okay.
I just wanted to...
our city to the south, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say something to the Republican supporters.
Yeah.
The thing about it is they always talk about wages and so forth and so on.
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you raise minimum wage in Canada and the United States, particularly the United States because it's a lot lower, to a really decent wage, it would not affect job growth that much. In other words, you would not lose that many jobs because – the manufacturing jobs that have been lost are never coming back.
That's right.
Because the difference in wages in China, in Canada, or the United States, goes from $30 an hour to like 30 cents a day or something.
Sure. Well, don't you think, Mike, if wages here went down to like $2.75 an hour, they would start bringing some jobs back?
No.
Even still.
The environment. Hold on a second.
Sorry
about that.
Okay. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that they need to create a stronger middle class, support the middle class in the United States to sustain a strong economy. And to do that, you have to have a decent health care system, decent wages, and so forth and so on. And corporations, their major expense is wages. So their incentive to maximize their bottom line and the revenue or the incomes for the top people are based on stock options.
Well, what if they figured out? What if all the big capitalists figured out that they don't really need everybody in all of this in the matrix of the economy, and that if you just had like a third of the people well waged. And the rest of us just making kind of peasant wages and buying minimal stuff to keep themselves alive and what have you, it would work just fine. Like, for instance, in Mexico or in a lot of Central American countries, you've got a third of the top third of the country there. They live like us. Of course, they have to have really gated communities, and they have walls that have broken ends of bottles in them. So people,
I've been there.
Yeah. Whereas, maybe they don't need that. All right. Mike, I gotta go. But thank you very much. And I want to just get this one last caller in. Gary, sock it to us, because we got to end the show real quick. We're ranting and raving?
Yes, you are. I think you have such a shallow-minded view of the entire process here. People should have known in the 1980s when computers took away the first jobs, and it wasn't the Germans and the Japanese that were stealing American workers' wages and jobs, but that was just the beginning of the tip of the iceberg. The United States, since World War II, has always had an advantage in trade. The reason being, this is a free market capitalist society. When the Berlin Wall came down in 89, half the population of the world that was on the other side of that entity was released to compete with the American worker.
You know, that's just phrases. There is no free market economy here. It's all been controlled to the advantage of the corporations and to the detriment of the average worker in this country and around the world. And the more that things were controlled, in terms of a minimum wage, in terms of any number of things, there was a middle class. Now we're going in the opposite direction. All right, my ranting and raving is through. Thank you, Gary.
we'll be back next week.
We will be back next week, but if you want a little lower key me, stay tuned, because I have a couple of interesting interviews following this. Stephanie, thank you so much. Remember, Friends Wanted on Facebook, and there will be this program as a podcast tomorrow or today at noon. Jalene Jordan.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter.
We'll do it all again next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and now you're two payments behind on your mortgage. Every time you turn on the radio, there's some cheerful couple telling you how they got out of debt overnight. Their stress is gone, and everything's just wonderful. Come on. The truth is, what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need real help, and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program, dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Get out of debt. Call Credit Card Relief at 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronics Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed, as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronics Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronics Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
This is your Biotech Minute. Biotechnology, a big word for an area of cutting-edge science that is improving the world we live in. In health, biotech provides breakthrough therapies and treatments for devastating diseases like cancer, MS, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, and HIV/AIDS. Biotechnology is also helping farmers produce more crops from existing acreage, reducing fuel use and greenhouse gas emissions, and it's creating fuels from renewable green energy sources like algae and plant waste. And this is just the beginning. The biotechnology research being done in laboratories today will improve the health and quality of our lives and our world for generations that follow. Biotechnology, helping heal, fuel, and feed the world. A public service message from this station and the Biotechnology Industry Organization.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Peter Werby here with you. Thank you very much for joining me. Yeah, I was traveling with my wife in Vermont a few years ago, and we came to a city. I was just looking this up, trying to Google it, and couldn't find it. I think it was Lancaster, Vermont. And I saw, wow, there is a statue of a wolf. And I said, oh, this is great, and went up to it. And it was a celebration of the extermination of the wolf, because in order for us humans to take over the land for our cities and for our agriculture and industry and what have you, we had to get rid of those pesky critters, both, of course, the native people, but also the native animals that lived here, that it was their land as well, and now we have it. So, and right now, you know, we have Yellowstone Park and, you know, some metro parks around here, so we've kind of learned, haven't we, to coexist? Well, not exactly. Great book I just came across by Caroline Fraser. It's called Rewilding the World, Dispatches from the Conservation Revolution. And Caroline Fraser, her work has appeared many places, the New Yorker, the New York Review of Books. Her first book, God's Perfect Child, was a New York Times book review, notable book, and also a Los Angeles Times best book. And we join her in Colorado, I believe. Caroline Fraser, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. And maybe what I like to do often, I always make the assumption everybody knows everything I do, and I don't even know everything that everyone else knows. But so some definitions. Rewilding. Maybe on the face of it, that's pretty simple. But in your new book, Rewilding the World, what's the word to mean there?
Well, the word was coined to encompass a whole new vision of conservation that was based on some scientific discoveries that have been made in the past couple of decades. And these discoveries were telling scientists that we really needed to have much bigger protected areas in order to protect the species that we had. I think everybody thinks of parks as somehow being enough to protect bears and wolves and so forth, but it was becoming really obvious to biologists, because of some advances in their own understanding, that parks were too small and that they were too far apart from each other to keep species healthy. And so they began to try and design a new system of conservation that was centered around much larger protected areas that were connected. And they often refer to the three C's, cores, corridors, and carnivores, because the one other thing that...
Wait, what was the first one? What was the first word?
Cores, as in big core areas.
Oh, C-O-R-E. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
And corridors, which would connect those areas, and then carnivores, because another thing that they were finding was that animals like wolves that you were just talking about are incredibly important in maintaining a healthy ecosystem. And they were finding that if you take those apex predators, they call them, at the top of the food chain, if you take them out, a lot of strange things start happening and the ecosystem starts falling apart. So rewilding was really a kind of major effort at retooling conservation.
All right, and the subtitle of your book, Rewilding the World, Dispatches from the Conservation Revolution. You went all over the world getting information for this book, correct? And
what? I was really curious to see how these kinds of projects that used those concepts of cores, corridors, and carnivores, how they were being put into practice in the real world, and whether they were actually working to save species and to try and stop this big extinction crisis that we're having right now. So I did go and visit a lot of different places around the world. There are some major projects going on in Africa, which are very large, the largest in the world, actually, these big transboundary parks, which are designed to open up migratory corridors for elephants. And, you know, went to Asia and Nepal, went to South America and Brazil and looked at some projects that are going on there. But also there are things going on here in North America. There's a lot of work going on all over the country trying to teach people what these concepts are and figure out ways where people can live with wildlife in a more sort of peaceful way. Because, you know, as you were talking about at the start there, the statue of the wolf celebrating the last wolf killed somewhere, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Living with these kinds of predators can be a challenge for ranchers, for farmers, for people who are maybe not familiar with the behavior of these kinds of animals and who fear them. So that's a big element of conservation now, is trying to get the word out about how to deal with wildlife in a way that isn't so hostile.
Caroline Fraser is my guest on the Peter Werby Show. She's written Rewilding the World, Dispatches from the Conservation Revolution, and it's published by Picador. There'll be a link on my website as well. The website for the book is rewildingtheworld.com. Now, I want to get to some of these specific trips and what you saw, but I'd like to get kind of a foundation for the ideas behind all of this. Now, I was just reading, there's a new head of the Focus on the Family, and he said somewhere in the United States, a grizzly is going, or a brown or black bear is going to kill some human being. And he said the lives of all of the bears are not worth the life of one human being. And as far as he was concerned, they could all be eradicated. And you said earlier about the function of apex predators, of which certainly bears are in those numbers. We would like to be able to go out to a park, not be threatened by bears or by snakes or wolves. But you can speak to that a little, because we're usually not threatened by them. But so if they're all gone, big deal. What happens if the apex predators are gone?
Well, Well, what they've seen in Yellowstone, which turned out to be, I mean, it wasn't intended to happen this way, but because the wolf was removed from Yellowstone about 75 years ago, it actually created a kind of experiment. And so when the wolf came back as part of a reintroduction effort a few years ago, scientists started watching what happened when the wolf returned. And there were a lot of effects that the return of the wolf had that nobody was really expecting. And one of the most striking things that happened was that because wolves came back, when wolves came back to Yellowstone, they were going after elk. They were, you know, the wolves follow elk, they shadow them, they make them really nervous, in other words. And so the elk didn't want to hang out by the rivers anymore, which is what they were doing when there were no wolves in Yellowstone. And the elk were actually pretty devastating to the river areas in the park because they were eating everything, you know, all that nice tender vegetation next to the streams and the rivers. And when the wolves came back, the elks weren't hanging out next to the rivers anymore because that's actually a really dangerous place for them. They can be killed much more easily in those kind of narrow areas and canyons than they can be in more open spaces. So what happened when the wolves came back was that vegetation started growing over the streams and the rivers again and shading the water, which cooled the water, which made it healthier and better for trout. Mm-hmm. And that was just a connection that people had really never made before because there was no, you know, real reason that anybody would have seen that. But because this happened in Yellowstone and people were paying attention to how the ecosystem changed with the return of the wolf, they could see that this is really a much better and healthier ecosystem now that wolves have returned. The wolves actually turned out to be much better, you know, and benefited the bears as well because wolves can be chased off of the kill by grizzly bears. And so the grizzly bears were making out like bandits when the wolves came back. And a lot of other raptors and species like vultures and ravens and so forth also benefited from being able to kind of clean up after those kills. So there's a whole range of effects in the ecosystem when the apex predators are there.
Well, here in Michigan, of course, there is such an overpopulation of deer because the predators are all gone, and it's good for the hunting industry, but what happens, deer begin stripping you know, the bark off of trees, not enough food for them either. And so,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Exactly. That's a huge impact on our, you know, both in terms of the impact on agriculture with deer getting in places where they shouldn't be and just a nuisance factor and also causing road accidents. Yeah. Deer are really cause a lot of accidents. And so if we can figure out ways to live with those top predators, it really is beneficial to us as well.
I agree with you, but I don't know that you directly addressed what the guy from the Focus from the Family, he said. Well, you know, this is our planet now. It certainly has been made the human planet, not one where we're integrated mm-hmm. with the other species. And if there's going to be one human casualty, you know, yeah, a little trout and, you know, a little riparian damage, big deal. We are ultimately the most important species here, and we should protect ourselves by any means necessary, I guess would be his argument.
Yeah, the problem with that argument is that it has no basis in fact, because I think once you know about the importance of ecosystem services to humanity, and these services include food security, I mean, for example, a billion people on this planet are dependent on fish and shellfish and seafood as their only source of protein. And scientists are now predicting that our oceans are going to be fished out by 2050. So that's an excellent reason for us to conserve our oceans. and to protect our ocean ecosystems. Because I don't think that, somebody from Focus on the Family who describes himself as a Christian could be in support of policies that would end up starving a billion people to death.
Or what they would consider God's creatures, the other, our fellow creatures on the planet. Caroline Fraser is my guest. She's written Rewilding the World, Dispatches from the Conservation Revolution. Just add .com after the title of the book. You'll get her website for it. And we're talking, among other things, we haven't discussed this directly, but how what environmental destruction is going on. We've alluded to some of it in the consequences, but there's some thought that a third of all plants and animals could disappear by the year 2050. And Caroline Fraser has gone around the world to a number of conservation projects to the extent that the subtitle of her book is Dispatches from the Conservation Revolution. And tell us, well, you know, one thing I'm always curious about authors. Like, if I was going to write a book, I couldn't imagine saying, "Okay, where's my ticket to Zimbabwe or Ecuador?" Or is that exactly what you did?
Well, you know, I actually didn't. When I started working on this, I wasn't planning to do quite so much travel. But the more research that I did, the more it became clear. Both how many projects of this kind were going on around the world, but also how different they are in different places, because a lot of this work requires biologists and scientists and conservationists to work with local people very closely in ways that ask people to maybe alter their lifestyles and alter their behavior. And so it really became clear that in order to get a really good picture of what's happening, that I needed to go to some different places around the world to see how this is unfolding. You know, a project in Kenya is very, very different from one in Brazil.
Well, usually when people are going to write on a subject, it's not, they're never, and I'm sure you were not, a blank tablet, that you had a background in this type of work and these ideas, and you probably had a general idea of what you wanted to report in your book, Rewilding the World. Were there any of your assumptions when you arrived at places that were just turned upside down?
Yeah, I think I didn't really comprehend at the beginning just how critical it is to work with local people and indigenous people. I didn't really have a great understanding of some of the issues involved in some of these places. And that was really eye-opening to me. And I came away from it, you know, still feeling very strongly about conservation, but also feeling that it is hugely important to craft these projects in a way that empowers local people and really benefits them, because otherwise I think they're just not going to work.
Well, pardon me, in Rewilding the World, there's optimism here, which I'm glad to see, because I'm generally pretty pessimistic about the trajectory of what's happening with the natural world. But give us some examples. Like, you've mentioned Kenya twice. What did you see there, and what was the nature of the project?
Well, Kenya is a really interesting example of a movement that's happening in Africa now that's centered around something they call conservancies, which is a way of giving local people in Kenya, it's the Maasai or Samburu people, legal authority and control over their own land, which they may not have had during the colonial period. And there are a lot of these projects now throughout Africa, in Namibia and in a lot of different countries. And what they're finding is that when people can make some of their own decisions about the economic development of their lands, that they will be much more invested in conservation, because the ecotourism benefits are pretty clear for some of these groups in Kenya, for example. You know, there are a lot of Maasai people who are developing their own ecotourism lodges and voluntarily setting aside large parts of their land for conservation. And what they're finding is that the lands that they set aside do recover much faster than areas that are continually grazed. And that's really good for them because they can maybe then figure out ways in which they can, graze in a more sustainable fashion. Mm-hmm. And they're really hard hit by climate change there. They're suffering, they've suffered many droughts, one right after the other. So these projects really empower them to control their destiny, both economically and in terms of improving their soil quality, their water quality, et cetera.
Well, one of the most unfortunate things is the killing of megafauna for, like, their horns, either elephants mm-hmm. or rhinoceros. And I remember for a while there was conservationists were cutting off the tusks of the elephant and the horn of the rhinoceros so the poachers couldn't kill them and take mm-hmm. them. What's the status of those animals that were, figure so much in the North American imagination, yet they're certainly all at risk. I assume some of the projects were involved those animals.
Yeah, in Kenya, definitely. One of the places I visited, Lewa Wildlife Conservancy, is a very famous rhino conservancy and preserve. And tragically, poaching has really spiked in the last year or so. On the 30th of October, a rhino was shot and killed in Lewa, which for many years suffered no losses of rhino at all because they have very good security. And unfortunately, some of these things like cutting off the horns are not all that feasible, both because of the expense of darting animals and actually doing that, and also it presents a problem for the animals in terms of defending themselves because, rhinos will fight with each other and so forth. And so if you have one animal that's without a horn and one animal with a horn, that's not so great. So it's not a kind of perfect solution. I think that the prices of some of these things, the horn and the ivory and so forth, have become so overwhelmingly high that the temptation is just too great for a lot of people in these countries. And the rhino poaching is really reaching a pretty scary level right now in southern Africa, particularly. I think that they lose a rhino every 30 hours or
wow.
something like that, which is horrifying.
Wow. Well, we only have about 4 minutes left, so maybe we could take a look at some of these other regions of the world that you travel to for rewilding the world. And select one that you are the most excited about and has the greatest chance of success.
Well, one project that was fascinating to me is this project between Nepal and India on the border. It's called the Terai Arc, and the World Wildlife Fund has been working on that for a long time, but the government of Nepal actually adopted it as their official policy, and it's an attempt to focus on some of the very good parks that they have had in the region, but to reconnect them and through restoring areas of habitat, which will allow tigers and rhino and elephant to kind of move from one place to another depending on the season, because they have, they have big monsoons in those areas, they have flooding, and so wildlife has to be able to get from one place to another, from low ground to high ground. And that is just a fascinating thing to see, because they've actually been really successful in opening up some of these corridors. In Nepal, they have a really good community forestry program that allows people to benefit from park revenues, so that every time, you know, somebody comes from the United States or the UK to go and visit a park in Nepal, you pay a fee, which isn't that much from our standpoint, but it's a lot in Nepal. And a large percentage of that fee goes to the communities nearby. And then they can decide how they want to spend that on ways that benefit conservation and their lifestyles in the area.
I don't think there's anyone listening, even given what that one man said about who cares about, or in fact, it wasn't who cares. He was saying, get rid of these predators because they endanger people. I think if it was up to a vote, we'd probably get about 99% agreement that we should preserve plants and animals and that the world would be diminished with the loss of them. But usually, when things are happening in Nepal or out even in Yellowstone, most of us are so disconnected from it just geographically. How can people intervene in this process to be part of the solution?
Well, I think if people were aware of how dependent we really are on ecosystems for our own food security, for flood control, for freshwater quality, for all of these things that we really take for granted here in this country, I think that we would be able to put a lot more pressure on our elected officials to do something about climate change and about moving to a much more sustainable energy economy. Because what we have now, frankly, just isn't working for us. And I think that it may take a major catastrophe to instruct people on how important these things are, but I hope that it doesn't. I hope that people, you know, are interested enough in wildlife, even if it's what they see in their own backyards, to do something about this. There's a really interesting project now in England of people getting together and using their own backyards, the stuff that they grow in the backyard, in a kind of collective way, you know, planting trees together in a way that is attractive to the native wildlife.
And if you bring neighbors together on a project like that, suddenly you have brought neighbors together with a whole range of political, social, economic, environmental concerns. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the program. My guest has been Caroline Fraser, and her book is Rewilding the World, Dispatches from the Conservation Revolution. It's published by Picador. Her website is rewildingtheworld.com. There'll be a link on my page as well, Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Thanks again for being on the broadcast.
Thank you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
That's the sound of people throwing out their old dehumidifiers. They've replaced them with the energy-saving Wave Ventilation Unit. Wave Ventilation expels moisture, gases, and toxins trapped in your basement or crawl space and replaces it with drier, fresher air. The computerized Wave Ventilation requires no maintenance. There are no buckets to empty, no filters to change. And compared to a dehumidifier, it will save you hundreds of dollars a year in energy costs. One customer wrote,
I was stunned by the difference. I had a dehumidifier for almost 20 years without ever getting rid of that musty smell. And now that smell is finally gone.
Wave can transform your home into a drier, healthier environment. Satisfaction guaranteed. Find out more about Wave Ventilation right now.
For free information, go to goodairnow.com. That's goodairnow.com. Or call 1-866-324-9481. That's 1-866-324-9481.
Water is all around us. No wonder it's hard to imagine we're facing a water crisis. But we are. So that's why the American Planning Association brings you simple ways to save water at home and in your community. Learn more at planning.org. That's planning.org. A public service message from this station and the American Planning Association.
101 The Riff.
Did you know the tap water in your home may be hazardous? Not to your health, but to your appliances and your wallet. Your home's hard water creates pipe-clogging lime scale, and that can shorten the life of your water heater, ruin your dishwasher, and break down your washing machine. Lime scale deposits block the heating element, and that could be costing you an extra $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove lime scale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare, the patented device used worldwide. See for yourself at bestsoftwater.com. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents lime scale buildup in your entire plumbing system. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances with HydraCare. Try it risk-free. Just go to bestsoftwater.com. That's bestsoftwater.com. Or call now, 888-883-8187. That's 888-883-8187.
Would you like to own a brand new computer and improve your credit at the same time? If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, Tronics Country says you're approved, even if you have bad credit or no credit. Call now for your new computer and get a free 20-inch LCD TV and color printer with your paid purchase. Call 1-800-990-2258. 1-800-990-2258. That's 1-800-990-2258.
He ran for state office and was beaten. Started a business and failed. Ran for Congress and lost. But thankfully, Abraham Lincoln didn't give up. Perseverance. Pass it on. A message from the Foundation for a Better Life.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. We talk about the world changing, don't we? That it's a new day, that change is in the air, and well, that it should be. There's a lot of things in our country, our world, our city, our neighborhoods that needs changing. And it's always so heartening when we see it on the local level. There's a saying, think globally, act locally. And it's a pleasure to bring two people into our studios that both have that vision of the global world and how we all fit into it, yet are doing something on a very local level. Professor Charles Simmons is a professor of journalism and media law at the Eastern Michigan University in Ypsilanti, and Sandra Simmons is in the English department at Wayne State University. Together, the two of them are the co-directors of the Hush House Museum and Leadership Training Institute for Human Rights, and they join me in the studio. Thanks to both of you for coming out.
Thank you, Peter.
And what do they say? For full disclosure, I should say that that Charles and I have been friends longer than any of you listening would probably even believe. But welcome. And, of course, I first heard about, I've known about the Hush House. I've known about the museum and the work that that you've done with providing the museum aspect of it. But you received a very prestigious award, the Martin Luther King Leadership Award, presented by Fox News. And I wonder, Charles, maybe you could tell us just what that involved. And, of course, what is the Hush House Museum and Leadership Training Institute for Human Rights?
Okay. It was presented by Wayne State University, I think you said. Yes. The Hush House began as a museum, a cultural center, because I had put together a traveling exhibit at Howard University back in the 80s, and it had traveled around the country. It was based on memorabilia that my grandparents had collected going back to the 30s and 40s. They were active both in the UAW when it first started, and my grandmother was active with the Baptist Women's Auxiliary, and they did a lot of social work and community work. So all of this was put together, and then my wife has an extensive collection of cultural and historical artifacts, and we decided to expand this museum into a place where we could heal young people and old people in the community, because we live in a very poor community called Northwestern Goldberg on the west side. It's in the 48208 zip code. And it's one of the poorest communities in the city, and with all the challenges of poverty that you have anywhere. So we, being educators, wanted to use this opportunity to bring folks together to talk about how we could lift them up lift them up, because we have a lot of people who fall through the cracks. Many don't even know about the ordinary services that are offered. And we have many people who are living in, well, we'll talk about the homelessness and the suffering that goes on in the community. So we wanted to lift them up and at the same time find the young people who we could educate to become leaders, and then expand that into talking about human rights as the measure of leadership, not only the civil rights of getting just our basic freedoms and liberties, but how do we define a human being in the 21st century? What are our needs? And we use the Universal Declaration of Human Rights as a guide, which addresses the issue of economic necessities. Education is a right. Health care is a right. And air and water as rights. And we want to expand this and throughout all the communities to let people know they have a right to all of these things.
Sandra Simmons, maybe you could tell us what the Hush House means.
Well, the Hush House means that there's healing, that the community has the power to heal itself, and that in healing that there's hope. There's an old saying, you know, about very poor communities, and the question's been asked through the ages, what good thing can come out of this community? And what we've already known is what we want to share with the greater community. At the Hush House, we've found that working as a collective community, that we've been able to create what we consider to be replicable models of success in the areas of social justice, environmental justice, restorative justice, particularly and the environment, as my husband said. Charles and I are both educators, so of course we're involved in the education movement as well. But what we attempt to do is that we attempt to create a space where people in the community and community leaders, activists, can all meet at the same table, and there's no big eyes. What we do is that we think through solutions, and then we work through them. For instance, we have projects with some colleges, like the one project we have with Lawrence Tech, where we have young people who are creating designs for replicable greenhouses that people can use the things found in their community to create a structure where they can grow food in a safe environment and sell it to, you know, things. So we're looking at these really interesting ideas, putting young people to work with college students, coming up with answers. We have programming, for instance, where we have survivalists helping to teach things like skills that you use in the wilderness training to work in the city. Because when you live in a building that has no heat, for instance, you've got to know how to create a warm space. And who better to turn to than a survivalist? So we're bringing unlikely groups together, and we're realizing, what people are realizing is that, my God, guess what? We're all human beings, and we have some things that we can teach each other. We're turning around the idea of what is service? What does that mean? The idea that we sometimes think, because you might have a little more than someone, that you're doing something from someone and you're giving, but you're not realizing that when you sit down at the table, if there's an individual before you who's managed to, say, live in a building that's had no energy for 3 years and you've never had that experience, they have something to teach you because they know how to survive. And so consequently, what we've discovered is that this whole new group of folks who are becoming homeless, especially in Detroit. I know you probably saw that massive notice of all these people. Where do you think those people are going? Those people are they're going to poor neighborhoods where their parents came from, and like Northwest Goldberg, and they're living in ways that you could not imagine. We have children, and this is not, see, what's happening in Detroit is happening all over the country. And we've discovered, we've been very fortunate because we've partnered also with the Liberia Literacy Foundation and with the country of Liberia, actually, because they've discovered that we share a lot of the same problems, so we're working to solve them together. We believe that what happens in Detroit happens in Monrovia, happens in Darfur, and that we can work together to create interesting solutions and replicable solutions.
My guests are Charles and Sandra Simmons. They're educators and they're co-directors of the Hush House Museum and Leadership Training Institute for Human Rights. It's located in Detroit, and maybe both of you could speak to this. You two are both professionals and needn't live in an area where you describe as one of the poorest in Detroit. It's just south of Henry Ford Hospital.
Right.
It's just to the southwest of the New Center area. It's right near Wayne State University. You could even move a few blocks away and have a nice condo, or you could move out in the suburbs and still come down and do the work that you do. How come you actually live on, and we can say the address, right? It's a public,
yes. Oh,
on Wabash.
Yes. 6179 Wabash.
Okay. And I've been there. It's in, I've laid that all out. Let me let you answer that before I go on to anything else. Why live there? Why not just have it as the center and live in an area that's not one of the poorest in Detroit?
Well, this was an old family house. I lived there when I was in high school. And at that time, well, actually from the mid-50s up to the late-50s, I was there. And at that time, it was a very functional blue-collar community. So it wasn't, it didn't have the dire poverty that now exists, but because of the deindustrialization in the city, many neighborhoods that used to be just traditional blue-collar and functional communities are now deep in poverty. So when I came back to take care of my elder, she was living in, my aunt was living in that house, and I really wasn't planning on staying there. I was going to move back. Actually, I was going to move either back to California, where I had just come from, or move somewhere else. And I had this exhibit, the collection of artifacts from the historical exhibit, and I decided just to put it up there in that house because although we have so many major cultural sites in Detroit, many of the people in the poor communities don't visit those institutions. They won't go out of the community. They can't afford it, or they don't know about it. They don't have the contacts.
I should just interrupt you to say the Hush House Museum is sort of a mini African American museum, right? It doesn't have the big slave ship
right
in there. That'd be a little much, but it is truly fascinating what you have. And I don't think I've been there, 2 years maybe?
Oh, it's changed.
Yes,
yeah,
right,
okay.
Right.
So, well, I'm due another visit. But go ahead. Sorry.
So that's why we're there. We weren't planning to stay there physically. But because the exhibit has just grown and it's actually moved us out of the space, now we don't have any. We have to move out now. But we wanted it to be there so it could serve the people in that type of community, and they would see something that they could have some respect for and hope, and give them some hope.
And then also, there's always going to be some sacrifice and service. You know, this is a thing that people, they don't want to have to deal with. The fact is that, yes, there was some sacrifices involved and because it wasn't really convenient. But the fact is to allow it to grow so that we could develop the relationship with people so that they could know we're there and they can come there. Because we do more than that. We're neighborhood advocates so that if there's some difficulty, people know that they can come there and there's some resources, they can get help, that kind of thing. So, you know, that's a part of this whole notion of activism, you know, going back to old school activism. The fact is that people wonder, what can I do? If you have a place, then you can open it up. You know, so many of us have these really great living rooms, dining rooms. We're not doing much with it. Well, invite some children in. You know, look up and down your street if you live in a challenged neighborhood. Make some sandwiches, pass them out, teach a lesson, you know something about something, teach something to, you know, teach some young women how to cook something. You know, this is the time that we can, where we've gotten to a place we don't know our neighbors. In Hush House, we know our neighbors because our neighbors know that we're there and we make ourselves visible. So that's the part of it. But there is some sacrifice involved. You do lose some privacy and stuff, but, it's been Wow, it's been a wonderful journey.
Well, if we don't know you guys, and the guys I'm talking about are educators Charles and Sandra Simmons, the co-directors of the Hush House Museum and Leadership Training Institute for Human Rights in Detroit. Detroit just seems like a high-risk zone. Well, I assume that anyone listening in the suburbs, and I live in one of the suburbs, views all of Detroit as just a place, well, maybe you go down to see a ball game or some of those bars. Other than that, I mean, I'm certainly not going to go, and I don't mean me, because I am, in fact, I make it a point to come visit you guys again. I'm not going to go down to Wabash because it's just a high-crime area. But both of you mentioned positive things, and, yes. and you kind of went over them as a series. Could you flesh one or two of them out that would be surprising? I think the urban agriculture aspect is sure surprising to people.
Yes, and before I talk about the urban agriculture, I want to lay out the situation when I came back to Detroit. And I had been living in Pasadena for the past 7 or 8 years, and I decided to come back to take care of my aunt. Well, the people, now she was one of the Rosie the Riveter women and, had retired and was, retirement, pension and was living well, you know, for a retired person, but she was ill and bedridden at this time when I came back. And so the neighbors were actually taking care of her. And I'm talking about with all of the negative things that go on in the poor communities, you know, the underground, economy and people hustling and carrying on. The same people who do some of those things were also taking care of her. I mean, and the door was open 24/7. Now they would, cash her check, pay her bills, cook for her. They took her car and did errands. Everything she needed, they took care of. Mm-hmm. Now, and she didn't complain about anybody stealing anything, or doing anything negative for her. Now, so you look in a community that's very challenged and you see the human qualities that are very positive on one hand, and on the other hand, you see all the, you know, the high crime as you talk about. So you have both aspects of humanity there as you have anywhere else. And I would now we don't leave our doors open 24/7, but we have a lot of traffic coming in and out. People leave things on our porch. We leave things on the porch for people to pick up. Sometimes the door is open, actually. And people are coming in and out. And I would challenge people who live in any wealthy community to do that and put something, leave their briefcase on their porch overnight and come back in the morning and still there.
Well, truth be told, as you may know, I lived in Highland Park for years and years. And usually, I would say 98% of residents there are just like everyone else. They want a safe, peaceful neighborhood. But you have 2% of the people involved in crime, and they can make life miserable.
The thing is, too, though, is that when you invest in your community, people will invest back in you. The fact is, we're in, as my husband said, we're in one of the poorest communities in Detroit, and yet because we've seeded into the community, people watch out for us. We've been very fortunate, and they take ownership of the place. We had a situation, you were asking about examples. We had a young man who, characterized by the media, television, so on and so forth, this style of young man, you know, looking ominous with the hood and mm-hmm. the pants and all this kind of stuff, and he was sort of moody and didn't talk much, you know. And we discovered he became one of the young men who was visiting and working with us because we mentor quite a bit. And we discovered that he was a very bright young individual who was considering suicide.
Wow.
And 16 years old, well, he's 15 at the time, and he said because, he was expected to play this particular role in the street, you know, and have certain behaviors, and that just wasn't his thing. And he was trying to dumb himself down at school. And we discovered that he turned out to be extremely bright, so bright that last year, we stayed up all night and finished an application to Harvard.
Oh.
And Harvard came to the hood.
Really?
This February.
Right, February.
This February. They came to the hood and they interviewed him. So some people would say, what good thing can come out? Well, see, the thing is that it's so important. You look at you look at a house and a house looks ramshackled and the roof is falling down but out of that house comes these beautiful, bright and shiny children, and you wonder, how in the world can that be? But the thing is that there's a quality about Detroiters, And that is this, is that we have this desire to live and not die. And that's why we keep going. People wonder, why hasn't Detroit died yet? You know?
Yeah.
Right, and it's because we have that determination to survive because we're worthy. And the children, we have these incredible lights here that won't give up. And all it requires is that we turn to each other like human beings.
And also the Hush House is one project among probably hundreds in the city of Detroit. Yeah. So the view from the outside, you really don't see the internal mechanism. Is there, and I may be twisting the historical use of this phrase, is there ever a fear on your part that if social and economic conditions remain the same, you will essentially be organizing what George Washington Carver called the talented tenth? That it was just that the majority of African Americans, because of their experience and because of how they're located within the economy and the social system, that it's too much to overcome. That poverty really does hurt people, their expectations, their abilities. It's such a waste. Poverty is such a waste of humanity. And that usually that with projects such as yours, that you will find the absolute best people, like you said, the young man from Harvard. So I guess what that is going to go to Harvard. I guess what I'm saying is, how does this key into what your broader understanding of the need for greater social change, that it's not just about picking one good guy, one good girl, but rather getting this larger social mm-hmm. transformation. Mm-hmm. Am I totally off the board?
No, I don't think so.
No, it's an important question, because the poverty, as you say, is overwhelming, and it does beat people down. And it makes a lot of people give up. On the other hand, we have in the classrooms, for example, in our communities, we have teachers who still have hope, and they have 30, 40 students every hour, and they're under their tutelage, and some of the students are paying attention. Now, I can't say it's a 10%. Or what the percentage is, but there are some students who shine no matter how bad the situation
right.
is. And so we're hoping that in the process of reaching however many number there are, that we'll be giving them, we'll light the fire in them or help it to grow, and that they can reach other people, numerous other people. So it won't stay limited within this elite group. But that it'll expand. You know the old saying that we used to have among our groups was, we lift as we climb. So if you can have a lot of people who have that philosophy, that is, when they move up, they bring other people with us, rather than simply the capitalist competitive idea that you just push other people away as you make it.
Yeah, in other words, they function as exemplars. In other words, the culture changes too, because as you said about the young man that you were so effective in transforming, is that he has something sort of different model. In fact, you were speaking a lot about models.
Well, absolutely. See, the thing is that we have to realize is that as someone we are transformed by them as well. So we're not the same before we had the experience with this young man. As Charles was saying, the Hush House is a leadership training institute that believes we train people who come to, who we see in the community or who are sent to us. I was at a school this morning over at McMichael School, which is in our community, and met with the principal and some of her key people there. And what we do is, and this is an example, there are 12 people who are going to come from that school community,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to train them as leaders in areas of social justice, restorative justice, environmental services, that kind of thing. And then we release them back into the community, and we try to help garner greater support so that we can give them the things that they need to do what they have to do. And they, in turn, train other people as leaders. So it's not so much about this, it's not so much about who looks like a leader, who has certain kinds of experiences. It's this. If you've lived in an abandoned building for X number of years, or you've been incarcerated and you survived and you're here in front of us now, you are a success. And now let's take those experiences that you have and let's use them and let's find out what does it take to maintain relationship with your children while you're incarcerated.
You know,
how we translate them.
Over this last week of the inauguration of Barack Obama, I almost exclusively, each time a young black man or woman, in their teens, have spoken, they said, "Now I feel that I can accomplish anything." Is this as positive as it sounds in a community that is so poor as the one you work in? Is it? Do you think it's really going to have an impact?
Yes, I do. Yeah. I do. I think that there's real possibility. The thing is that, see, when we talk about community, over time, terror isolated us into these little tiny cells almost, and now hope can knit us together so that we can recognize not only are we community because of how we live and where we live, but we are community because of our vision. And that if we have this shared vision, if we have this shared vision, that we want our children to succeed, guess what? We will create this larger vision, this communal vision that will empower us to do it. I believe it's possible.
I almost forgot I was doing a radio show. I just looked at the clock here. We've got about a minute and a half, we should get some particulars. My guests have been educators Charles Simmons and Sandra Simmons, and they are the co-directors of the Hush House Museum and Leadership Training Institute for Human Rights. And also the curators, because the museum, when I was there, it had tremendous stuff that Charles Simmons had put together. Sandra Simmons now has brought material there as well. I'm down there pretty quickly. Let's have the address again. It's on Wabash, I know.
6179 Wabash. That's okay. Near West Grand Boulevard.
Our number is 313-896-2521. That's 313-896-2521. And we would invite folks to go on YouTube, look at the film about Harvard coming to the Hush House and In the Belly of the Beast. There's several films on YouTube. And we're also open. We really can use donations, of course, money, because you know how that is. But we need canned goods and plastic sheeting, coats, gloves, those kind of things. But if you would call us at 313-896-2521, 2125, is that right? 896-2521. 2521.
I'm going to have this on my website, too. Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, PeterWerbe.com, or email me if you're interested either in visiting or if you want to make donations. We're completely out of time, and I want to thank Charles Simmons and Sandra Simmons for giving us this hope, if you will. That's the word, hope and change, and we can make it so. Thank you so much for being on the Peter Werbe Show.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Feels like time's running out. Maxed out on your credit cards, collection calls are coming every day, and you're two payments behind on your mortgage. You need help. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free, and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. Call 866-290-8282. That's 866-290-8282. If you want a new computer but think you can't get credit, think again. Just call Tronix Country right now. No matter what your credit status is, now you can own a brand new desktop or laptop computer. Your approval is guaranteed as long as you have an active checking account and can afford small weekly payments. With Tronix Country, there's no credit check. You will not be turned down. Call right now and order your new computer. You'll also get a free color printer and a free digital camera. Just call 800-990-2258. But that's not all. Call right now and you'll also get a free 22-inch high-definition TV with your paid purchase. You heard right. A free TV with your new computer. All you need is an active checking account and your approval is guaranteed. Don't wait. Call Tronix Country right now. Call 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258.
Detroit's Rock Station 101. The Riff. 101.1 WRIF.
Hi, this is Mark Jermaine from Creed.
Hey, everybody, this is Dave Grohl from the Foo Fighters.
Hey, it's Casey.
This is Chad.
This is Chris.
This is Brian.
Gabo.
And you've got it on Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF, The Rift.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Kick ass, rock and roll.
Everything that rocks.
So tired, sleeping through the day.
go time.
Now!
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
You must have
everything that rocks.